Hey, friend, thanks for checking out episode 62 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Joining us on this episode is our returning guest, illustrator, super Godzilla fan, and all-around nice guy, John Bellotti Jr. You may remember John from our big Godzilla Nerd Fest, but he is more than just Godzilla, listener. We really got to meet John and find out about his early career, how he got into art, working as a scenic painter for television shows, and of course, no show with Bellotti would be complete without a big Godzilla Geek Fest section at the end. Now, the best part about this, listener, is you're going to get to hear our filthy friend Rugboy gradually get inebriated. That's right, Rugs was in the interview with us, and by the end of it, we have a drunk Rugboy. Don't miss the post show. He gets a little sappy and sentimental, and it's hilarious. Let's check it out.
It's the Jockey Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Jockey Nerd! Yahoo, everyone! We're back! Thanks for joining us. This is the Jockey Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name is Anthony.
He's the jock!
He's the nerd.
And what's this bonus? He's the rug boy! What?
What's up, everyone?
Hi, Rugsy! Thanks for joining us. Rugs is here because we have a great returning guest today, yes. Anthony. A friend of the show, artist slash illustrator slash Godzilla nerd slash Godzilla expert, Mr. John Bellotti Jr. Johnny, how's it going?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
Hey, welcome back, friend.
I hear something different.
Yeah. Hear something different.
Yeah,
is it happiness?
The audio is better.
It's
a new microphone. Yes, it's a much better microphone. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, no problem. We turned John on to these ATR 2100s. They were on sale on Amazon for like $40, is, you should buy a six pack at that point in case you. And they, John, here's another great thing. Anyone who owns this mic, they come with a lifetime warranty. You fucking drop it, break it, they'll give you another one.
They fit perfectly in my slack hole.
Oh, that's very good. Because, well, you're not supposed to put the mic in your slack hole, Rod Boy. That's, I'm surprised.
You're not?
No.
I thought that's exactly what you're supposed to
do. How come it sounds so good if the mic is in your slack hole? And which end went in first? I'm confused. Listener, when was, Anthony, do you remember when he was back last on John Bellotti and Rugs?
I knew it was the Big Godzilla Nerd
that's
Fest.
That's right, Big Godzilla Nerd Fest.
That was awesome.
It was a 6-hour podcast.
It really was. We only scratched the surface.
I know.
We could have done that for another 6 hours. Which is depressing.
But listener, it's not. Go listen to it. It's not really six hours. It's like 2:45.
If you like Godzilla, cut it down. Yeah. You should listen to that episode. Yeah. And we'll save some Godzilla talk for the second half of the show because there's no point in having us three out of us four that love Godzilla not at least acknowledging some of Godzilla stuff.
Geek boner! Of course, that's what the show is about. You get to geek out about what you guys love. But we wanted John back because Big Godzilla
Nerfist more than Godzilla
was so fun, but he is more than Godzilla. The man is an awesome illustrator, and he's had a full life full of stories, and I really wanted to get to
and
know him.
And he has, like, real opinions on things.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Right?
I do. I really do.
We'll save that towards the end, towards the open geek out. But I just wanted to start by, first of all, thanks for coming back on. And how's the Art of Robo 7 going? That's your website, correct, right?
Yeah, that's my website. It's going good. It's, you know, I do it when I get home from work. Right now I have a Gamera 3 poster I'm working on.
Ooh,
fuck yeah.
And I'm at work. Yeah, you're going to like it. Tony and Rugboy, you're really going to like it.
Nice.
And I got like, I'm doing like these anime girls / Godzilla girls where like I dress up these anime girls in like Godzilla costumes and stuff. So
really?
It's
a cool concept. You can check it out.
Yeah, I did Goji Girl. It was a Godzilla girl. I'm doing a Mothra girl. I got a Gamera girl that I'm working on. So yeah, that's really what I got. I want to do a Bruce Lee poster. I just got to get better at drawing Bruce Lee. And that's it, man. That's all I've been working on at the moment. I got some other stuff planned. But
Are you a big Bruce Lee guy?
Oh, yeah. After Godzilla, it was Bruce Lee.
What was your favorite Bruce Lee movie?
The Unfinished Game of Death.
Oh, wait. They never finished? What did they put out?
He died.
That's right.
Yeah. I think they put a dude in there that wasn't really Bruce Lee.
It's horrible.
And they feel like filmed him from like the back. You can totally tell it wasn't him.
In the shadows.
You think that all Asians look alike, but they don't.
No.
That's when you realize they don't look at it like that.
Yeah, you're like, hey, this is wrong.
This is not the same Asian.
It's so eerie how Brand and Lee kind of went out the same way on a movie, and they had to do the same thing. And, you know, granted, they had a little more technical effects to help that one, because that one, it wasn't that bad, but wow, what, how, like, is there a curse on the Lee family? What
that
is
the craziest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
There's like a story that some like sensei or whatever put like a curse on the Lee family.
So there was a curse. Holy shit.
That's
dude.
What they say.
That's
you know,
made up, I think, probably.
I believe in curses. That's how I got here.
Yeah, that's how a felty, from a boy to a felty.
Well, Bruce Lee was the first to like incorporate different styles, like not just stick to one form of martial arts. So a lot of the traditionalists didn't like him. He was like the first mixed martial artist before MMA.
Somebody should have cursed Jackie Chan then. What the fuck? I'd rather have him around than just switch him out. Come on.
You don't like Jackie Chan?
No, I like Jackie Chan.
But
I would sacrifice Chan to have Bruce Lee back.
Let's just do a quick one. Really quick.
Yeah.
Your five best martial artist dudes that you like.
Ooh,
like in movies?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tony Jaa. Jet Li.
Yeah.
And Jackie Chan, and then Donnie Yen, in that order.
I don't
That's
even
a
know
good
five.
One.
That's a good one. I would throw in, I'm just going to throw in some names. Ong Bak. Who's that? Tony Jaa? Oh, that's Tony Jaa.
That's Tony Jaa.
Oh, that's Ong Bak.
That's,
And I would actually throw in Jean-Claude Van Damme. I like his shit.
Oh, you would? Oh, my
God. Those ass cheeks, man.
Yeah. He's got shit.
Dude, Bloodsport? Bloodsport? Come on, dude.
God damn.
I never in my life would wear silk black underwear.
Bloodsport? Kickboxer?
They're remaking Kickboxer. You know?
Yeah, there's like a reboot. What about you, Bilotti? You give me your five.
Bruce Lee, Donnie Yen, the guy from The Raid, what's his name? Iko Kuwais, I think his name is. That guy is unbelievable. Not Tony Jaa, because he's all like fat and bloated now. I can't stand him. He lost it.
But that
Sammo Hung.
Oh, Sammo Hung, yeah.
Yeah, Sammo Hung and Jackie. Those are like my five. But definitely the guy from The Raid is like my top guy.
Was it Sammo Hung on like Nash Bridges?
But
He had a crossover. It was on Martial Law. He was doing Martial Law with Arsenio Hall, and then they had a crossover.
Yeah, like those are like the days where they had like really bad like TV Kung Fu cowboy shows.
Yeah.
Like with Texas Walker.
Yeah,
wasn't
Chuck Norris in all of them?
Yeah.
I think it started all of them. You know what? I gotta say, I do like Wesley Snipes' fighting style as Blade. Like, it looks like a superhero fight, and it's very, very succinct moves. And like, I just like watching his
fight. Snipes,
yeah. I know he's probably not up there with those other dudes.
No,
if Brandon Lee was alive, he'd be up.
Oh, dude, he'd be fierce.
You know what's funny? When you know Bruce Lee movies, his the fighting style in his movies was very like. Very cinematic, you know, the big punches, the big kicks. But if you watch Rapid Fire with Brandon Lee, he does actual real Jeet Kune Do in that movie that Bruce Lee was teaching. Yeah. Bruce Lee always wanted to show that on film.
Right.
Yeah, he totally did. Well, I love Rapid Fire. When I saw that movie,
did we see that together? I feel like we saw that.
We did see
it. Because we were like, dude, Brandon Lee, let's go check out. I remember that sick move
when he's in the kitchen scene.
Yes, that's the scene.
Yeah, and he fucking slides through the fucking, what is that? The island?
Yes.
Under the cabinets?
Yep.
And he fucking stabs the guy with the fork?
Then he kicks the table up. That scene is awesome. Yeah. I still remember that scene out of that movie. It's a very it was called Rapid Fire, right? I'll put that link in the show notes, people.
And Powers Booth was there.
Oh, my favorite. Hold on.
Geek Mooner.
Powers Booth.
Just mentioned Powers. He's on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Powers Booth, who has
the original Red Dawn. He was in the original Red Dawn. Do you remember that?
Let me throw Walking in a martial arts villain that everyone probably knows. Bolo Young.
Oh God, yeah. How could nobody?
Is Bolo Young Genghis Khan, or is that he's a different guy? Is that or Bolo Young is the big guy?
John Wayne.
He's the big guy from Bloodsport that breaks the guy's leg in half and like he's just the most. He's like he's always a villain in the movies.
I had a girlfriend that really liked Bolo Young for some reason.
He's huge, dude. He's jacked.
Dumped her the next day.
He looks. You know who I'm talking about?
No, what's he in?
Have you seen Bloodsport?
Yeah, a long time ago.
The main villain. Look him up.
He's like the only jacked Asian guy.
He's the big Asian guy.
But look up.
And he was in Enter the Dragon. Do you ever see Enter the Dragon?
Yeah, he was in that too. Yep.
He was in that. He's like Bolo. He's like Dah. That was
this dude. Yeah, he's the biggest Asian guy I've ever seen. How is that possible? What the fuck? What kind of noodles was he eating?
He's eating whole cows.
So he's with Bruce Lee.
He's got giant man boobs.
Yeah,
he's got movies.
Wow.
He's got movies.
Oh, and he goes back to the Bruce Lee day. His man boobs were not as big back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Something steroids. Happened. Something. Oh, I
now
guess.
Now he's Bolo old.
What's up with his eye, too? He's got one. Maybe that was just in the movie. Wow, that guy's awesome, and the scar on his face is cool. So, Bilotti, you've been a martial arts fan since you were young, right? Probably watching these movies on TV growing up.
Yeah,
did
Fox
you ever
Five.
Take karate?
Yeah, I took Jeet Kune Do.
Oh, wow. Bruce Lee.
Yeah, I took Jeet Kune Do and Filipino stick fighting when I was like a teenager.
Kali?
Filipinos. Dude, this guy's Kali stick. He's like Donatello. He's like, oh, like stick this dude. I bet you could take Rugboy, though.
Anthony, do you know any fighting styles?
I did train in college. I did Muay Thai and like a little bit of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I wrestled in high school. So I've got a little bit, but I'm not – I don't have the traditional martial arts background that I Bilotti.
All right, here's the pay-per-view event. Bilotti versus Anthony Krizak, live on pay-per-view, live on Blab, next Jock and Nerd, book it.
Oh, shit.
Do you want to hear a funny story? Do you want to hear a really quick funny story?
Yeah.
I was – me and my girlfriend were in – we have a dog run where we take our dogs, we throw the balls for them. And we have this, it's a claw that you grab the ball with, but they're about as long as like sticks. So I had two of them, and I'm waiting for her to throw the ball to me. So I'm sitting there in the other end of the dog run, and I start doing my old stick form, my old kata, you know? And I'm like running around the dog run with my sticks, doing Muay Thai kicks. And then I stepped in something, and I don't know what it was. So I come back in the apartment, and I'm like, why do I smell dog shit?
Oh, no.
And I guess when I was like, you know, moving around the dog run with my sticks, doing my Jeet Kune Do, I turned my shoe over. I had a giant mound of dog shit and rocks. Like,
you got some caca from your kata.
It was bad. No, Rug Boy, it was bad. Like, I had to wash it off in the shower. I was like, no more kata in the dog run.
No more kata in the caca.
Immediately when you say the forms, I think of the Walking Dead episode where Morgan is learning Aikido.
Did you catch up yet?
I'm caught up.
Oh. That's the best episode. That was my favorite episode so far.
Wow.
Aikido
is
that's a big Steven Seagal. He trained in, I think, Aikido.
Yeah.
It's the peaceful. It's the peaceful martial art. Well, it's peaceful as you can get.
Yeah. Cold run at me.
Bilotto, you still practice? Like, you still know all the moves?
Oh, no. I've given everything up for the art at this point. I used to play the drums, like, intensely play the drums.
Wow.
But yeah, you get older.
You were a good drummer. I heard from a bird that you were
a
good drummer.
That's what people have said about me. My dad played the drums, so I just took his drum set and I would play Metallica on his Beatles drum set and destroy it.
Nice.
You should be part of – I'm going to start the Rugboy band.
Yeah, let's get started.
You can play guitar and you can play drums.
You know what? We can record tracks all online and then just piece it together. Like, I could lay down a guitar track. You could lay down the drums. Rugboy could put some vocals and we could put this out. We don't have to be together. This is 2015, people.
In grade school, I also played percussion in the xylophone. So
that doesn't count.
You have a xylophone player.
But he only plays toy xylophone. It has to be Fisher-Price xylophone.
With the rainbow-colored keys.
So, Bilotti, you were a rock drummer then? That was your jam?
Yeah, heavy metal, rock, all that stuff.
Wow. All right, we'll geek about that later. I want to get back to the art, though. When did you start drawing? What is the earliest you remember drawing?
Kindergarten, when I drew a naked mermaid, and I called my mom into the school to tell her about it.
Oh, shit.
That's awesome.
What led to the naked mermaid? Was it just a spur-of-the-moment thing?
And how did you know what a naked mermaid looks like?
I don't know. I just drew a mermaid with boobies. I have no idea how
topless?
It even happened.
Topless?
Yeah, it was topless.
But then the bottom is fish,
oh, yeah, the
right?
Bottom, yes.
So you
the bottom
saw, you like saw this somewhere.
Which is just like real life.
Yeah.
Just like real life.
Geek boner.
But that's funny. So what did the school have to say to your parents?
They were upset. My mother was like, oh, okay. He drew a topless mermaid. And like nothing happened. I just kept drawing. It didn't stop me. You know, that's all I remember. My mom, they got a good laugh out of
it. Meanwhile, the kid next to him is drawing dicks and balls and penises, and nobody's paying attention, and he ends up drawing.
That was me.
Yeah, I was going to say that kid was Rugboy.
That's what happens. They called the wrong kid's parents. That was the problem.
And the other kid's like cutting himself with razor blades at school, but they want to put me under the
He grew up to be a serial killer.
Just for a pair of titties.
Yeah, exactly.
So did your parents like support you in the arts? Did they encourage your drawing after the naked mermaid incident?
They
were like, give this kid a ball and go outside and play. No, they did.
No, they did. Well, I was a big fat kid, so I didn't really have
me too. Aw.
Yeah, I was a big fat kid, so I was always inside drawing. Yeah, but my mom was like a frustrated artist. She wanted to pursue it, but back in the 70s, like, women didn't pursue careers, you know? So she, like, put it all on me, and, you know, and I had a desire to do it. So that's kind of how they were very supportive of me. They would tell me, like, you know, oh, you just think about, you know, being an art teacher or graphic design. My dad tried to get me involved in his printing business, but I was like, hell no, I want to draw Spider-Man. Yeah. And that's all I'm doing for the rest of my life. I was very adamant about what I wanted to do when I was very young.
It's interesting that your mom has had talent, because we've talked about this, how, like, creativity and artistic talent, can it be taught? Do you have to be born with it? Like, my whole dad's side of the family drew. They're all really good artists, but none of them did anything with it. And when I started drawing and I realized my dad could draw and all these people on my dad's side could draw, I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, many of you guys had this talent and you kind of, like, wasted it. I was like, I want to use this and enhance it. So I don't know, like...
You can try to improve at it even if you don't have the natural talent, but you're never going to be as good as someone that naturally has it. I think it's a natural gift.
I have a theory.
Go. Right?
Okay, this is the rundown.
Wait, hold on.
Here's the rundown. Okay. This is what I've learned from life. And I'm not around a lot of kids, but from what I see, this is just a judgment that I've made. All kids love to draw.
Yeah.
They all do. You give them a fucking crayon, they draw something. All right? At a certain point in time, a percentage of those kids stop drawing for some reason. Mm. They become interested in other things. They have other priorities, blah, blah, blah. Those kids that continue to draw are the ones that become artists. Mm. I think that a creativity is inside every person. Mm. I think something just stamps it out.
I like that. Yeah, I mean,
you're right.
Yeah.
I did like to draw. I just wasn't good at it when I was a kid.
But how do you
get to the age where you can evaluate yourself, that's when you stop. And if you evaluate yourself and then you're good, you keep going. Right. Or if somebody else gives you friggin' positive encouragement, you keep going. If people just go, and nothing ever happens with it, you stop. Because we all want to create.
Yeah. You think everyone is innately creative then? That we all do
want to
create.
Yeah, but then it shuts down. I think when you're a kid, you're open to anything. Anything's possible. You believe in magic. You believe in Santa Claus. You believe that people could be nice, you know?
Yeah.
And then you slowly believe you get the truth, which is the opposite.
Well, and the irony is, like, kids' drawings are so sincere and honest, and sometimes they can be amazing. And when you grow up to be an artist, you kind of want to go back to that feeling of not knowing anything and pulling that just natural talent out. And so sometimes a lot of your life is just chasing how you were drawing and trying to be a kid again and seeing life from that point of view.
Yeah, I'm still drawing this. I mean, when I was a kid, I obviously the topless mermaid, and I'm still drawing like half naked women. And I would draw like big Godzilla battle scenes and Ninja Turtles, and I'm still drawing the same stuff. So it's also like holding on to your childhood. Like, you know, the people that just sort of become adults and they just like, oh, I'll get a regular job, I'll get a mortgage, I'll get married because that's what society wants me to do. I mean, I just think a lot of people follow this sort of book that doesn't exist and how to be an American citizen. And I think that's total bullshit. Yeah. Because if you have like a creative mind and any sort of talent, I think it's very hard in this country because they don't support that. Over here, they support jobs in finance and doctors and lawyers, the typical shit that people from other countries come over here to look for.
Yeah.
They don't support the arts. So you got to have some pretty big testicles to pursue a career in the arts.
But it's not just here, dude. It's culturally, it's everywhere. Like my parents, and I don't blame them, they're immigrant parents that came in the 70s, and they saw that I wanted to draw, and they tried to tell me that, like, this would be a nice hobby, but you should go into medicine or engineering or computer
something a little more stable, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. They think it's a hobby, but they don't. You know, you just have to realize that your passion, you need to follow your passions sometimes. And like, look at the Drew Struzan movie. Like, you're not going to make it right away. You got to put a lot of hard work in it and just do it because you love doing it. What'd you draw early on? When was the first time you drew Godzilla?
The first time? It was grade school. Like, I mean, it was definitely grade school. I would copy the old – remember Dark Horse was releasing those Godzilla comics in the
80s? Yeah, they had it,
Yeah, they had Art Adams just do
it. Oh, that was the Art Adams Godzilla.
I would copy I would copy Arthur Adams when I was a kid. I would copy his Godzilla. But then I stopped Godzilla because I felt like I couldn't draw him. It was so weird. So for like 20 years, I didn't touch Godzilla. I was just drawing people and comic book characters. And then last year is when I started drawing Godzilla again. And the first thing I drew came out looking exactly like the Godzilla I was drawing. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I could draw this?
Wow. That's you awesome. Just started drawing Godzilla a year ago. Yeah.
That's a revelation. Yeah.
Holy shit. I thought you had been like working on Godzilla this whole time.
No, I was deathly afraid of drawing Godzilla. I could never draw him. And then I just sat down and said, let me try to draw this. And I did. And I came out cool. And I was like, wow, I'm going to keep going with this. And like a lot of times I'll try to draw like a girl or a guy. And you know, like you sit there and you're trying to get the look and the eyes, and I'm sitting there for hours trying to. I'm not a portrait artist, but with Godzilla and these monsters, I do it in the first shot. It's like I'm like a sniper. I'm like a Godzilla sniper. It's like one shot, one kill with this. It's like I'm like I just got to run with this and just keep going and see what.
Because you got it in your bones, man. That's what it is.
Are you just so familiar with the character and it's just like you've watched it so many times that
it's like the artist. Yeah, it's like a lot of I think John Singer Sargent, he was one of my favorite artists of all time. And when he would paint a portrait, he would hang out with some of his subject matter. Like that's how you learn how to draw them. You study them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what's weird about that is when I try to draw people, I've discovered that if I don't know the person and I'm just drawing random people on the street, I can nail their likeness because I don't know them. And I'm literally seeing what they look like. Now, when I try to draw friends and people I know really well, it comes out all fucked up.
Yeah, there's an expectation there. You got to make them happy. You got to see it. It's weird. The reaction is going to be there.
Plus, I feel like you know them more. And like that's also coming in. You're trying to draw how you know them instead of actually seeing them visually.
Yeah, it takes your perspective. I said taint. Can I ask Johnny a question?
Oh, yeah, Rugboy, go ahead. Yeah,
he's the lead guest.
Yeah, and actually, we have to, we got to thank Rugboy for turning us on to Bilotti. This is Bilotti is Rugboy's guy. He brought him into the fray. He's a friend of the show. So thank you, Rugboy. Take over.
Yeah. Well, listen, all right, there's a certain point in time where you're a kid and you're in a high school, wherever you are. And you're like the coolest artist in the whole class, all right? Yeah. I'm guessing that your high school might not have had a lot of art people in it. You probably were the outsider.
Yeah, I went to two different high schools, though. I went to a Catholic high school where I was the only artist. And then I went to a public high school because I couldn't take it anymore of being in a Catholic high school. And they had an art classes and they had artists and musicians and metalheads. And that's who I gravitated towards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they weren't like mind-blowing, amazing artists. They were just people that were creative. So I was more drawn to those kids.
So when you make that transition from wherever you are that's kind of limited to somewhere like FIT,
right,
where like, you know, the top crop is trying to get in, you know, from every other school, and you're now introduced to this whole other demographic of people that are more like you and have the same interests or are also good artists. What is that? You're like a big fish in a small pond, and you go into FIT, and now you're like one of a million artists there. What's that like?
It is a little weird. It's a little weird to be in a class, and you look to your left, and someone's drawing something that's on the same level as you. You know, that is a little weird. But at the same time, there's a kinship there with a lot of these guys, especially in FIT, that was like, oh, wow, you like anime and Dragon Ball and Bruce Lee movies too? And I, you know, coming from Staten Island, it's all, not to generalize, but there's nothing but city workers. There's cops, firemen, you know, EMT workers on Staten Island. Very blue collar.
Yeah.
There's Guidos over there. They just care about fucking going out and getting laid.
What is FIT, by the way?
Fashion Institute.
Oh, got it.
Yes, and despite it's called Fashion Institute, it's not just fashion.
Oh, got it.
Okay. No.
Even though it's called FIT.
For the jocks that are listening that don't know what FIT is.
I used to hang out by FIT in my 20s.
Okay.
Looking for chicks that were into art.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of dudes that look like chicks.
You got to be careful and make sure you have
you check before.
The talent there is good? The ladies? Yeah.
Oh, yes, the talent. Oh, that talent.
Because it's fashion?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The best in New York, I have to say.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
The best.
There's hot buns over there, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So that's
we used to go to this bar that was, it's called the Garden Tavern.
Oh my God! Yeah.
All right.
And, I know that.
Okay, yeah, of course you know because you went to
I know
MIT.
That place.
The
exactly.
Fucker, I know this shit. All right. Used to be this place called the Garden Tavern, and all the FIT girls would go there.
Yes,
and you would just see a fucking cavalcade of a fucking hot broads coming in there, like that. Were just,
like shooting fish in a barrel.
And there was no guys at their school except for Bilotti.
All right, this is getting interesting.
For the hot pork injection.
So, Bilotti, how many late nights you spent at the old Garden Tavern there?
Not a lot. We used to go to Mustang Sally's, and I worked in the West Village at this cool toy store called Classic Toys when I was in FIT.
Yeah.
So every weekend I was getting drunk down in the West Village. I was always in the West and East Village when I was in FIT. I didn't really hang out up there too much. So that's where all my ghosts of my youth are in, like, the West and East Village pretty much.
Ruggs, though, I did love your point about being a big art fish in a small pond and going to be a small art fish in a big pond. I had the same experience when I went to Pratt, because you show up and it's both things. You're excited because now you get to meet all these creative people, but then you're like, holy shit, I suck. Look at these fucking people. But this is where you go to learn, where now you've made the commitment. John, at what point were you like, I want to be an artist. I want to go to art school. I want this to be my living.
I wanted to go to, my dream was to go to school visual arts. A lot of my favorite comic artists, Joe Quesada, who's the editor, I think he's the editor in chief of Marvel now.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he said he went to the SVA. Joe Mortarera, who was my hero when I was a teenager, went to SVA. I believe it was SVA. And I said, oh, I want to go there. So I was like a young kid. I was like 9 or 10 years old, and my dream was to go to art school. And what happened was I was really bad at math. I didn't pay attention in high school. I was always drawing something.
Dude, I'm the same way. Like, we are all, the three of us. If you see my notebook in high school, there's a couple
Anthony,
of notes.
Great at math.
Anthony, probably. That's why we
Big
have
surprise.
Him. He knows how to add the numbers for the podcast.
I actually was pretty good at math.
Yeah, of course you were.
I figured.
But dude, all my high school notebooks are like, there's Spider-Man crawling down the side, fighting Batman, fighting the Teenage Ninja Turtles. There's like scenes. There's no fucking notes anywhere. I don't know how I passed high school. I don't remember doing any work. But I know, you just dreamed of being like a comic book artist.
That's it. That's all I wanted to be. I was just a comic book artist when I was a kid.
So what was your first pay art gig?
First pay art gig?
Where you're like, you sold something. You're like, holy shit, I sold art for the first time.
It was when I was a kid. I did something for my neighbor for her. She did like a book for her church, and she needed somebody to draw the cover. So I drew like Jesus with his hands open.
You drew Rug Boy.
I got like $20 for it when I was a kid. That was my first paying gig.
That's good.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I also drew Jesus once.
And I'm sure it was amazing.
It was black Jesus.
All hail
black
Jesus.
It was divine.
It was the blackest Jesus you ever seen.
It was actually, it was a felty black Jesus on felt. It was one of those felt paintings of a felty Jesus.
I just have to throw in about Jesus. The way he's portrayed in Western society is probably not how he looks.
I don't think that's how he looks.
No, not at all. Like, not at all. Like, there's been studies that he probably was like Middle Eastern.
He grew up where?
Yeah, he grew up in the Middle East. Probably had like curly, kinky hair. Yeah,
he looked like an Arab, dude.
Yeah.
He's going to look like a Hebraic
just like
Arab.
Shabrat.
You look like Imran.
I probably look a lot more like Jesus than Jesus looks.
Yeah, I knew you were Jesus.
Yeah, where's your savior now? See? Man. So how about, okay, so after college, what happens then? Where do you, you're like, okay, I want, where do you find work? What do you do?
So what happened was 9/11 happened, okay?
Oh, okay.
And 9/11 happened and nothing made sense to anybody, and especially not to myself. And I said, at the same time I was getting into comic book art, I was also getting into those Hong Kong action movies, like John Woo movies.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was like really, like heavily influenced by film directors. And I was like, you know what? I want to be in the film industry. I want to make movies.
Oh, wow.
So I said, I want to work in the film industry as something. I didn't know what it was. I just was still formulating this. And I looked into directing movies, and I was like, I don't even know where to begin. But I used directing as like an inspiration to get involved. So when 9/11 happened, I had a professor, Karen Santry, who was amazing. And we had a class called documentary illustration class, where we would go out on location and draw people.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. So we were sitting there. A friend of mine named Tom, he turned to my teacher and said, oh, a friend of mine works as a stagehand in Broadway. And my teacher, Karen, said, oh, I used to be a scenic painter for Broadway shows. And I overheard them. I said, come again. What was that? And she told me about something called scenery. for theater and film. And I said, what is that? And she explained to me that there's this whole union. And being from Staten Island, I heard the word union. I was like, hey, union, pension. I like that. So she told me all about this. So we went down to the union hall and I asked them about what the business was like. And they told us. And I said, look, I want to keep doing this. So they said, okay, well, you know, when you graduate, you know, just try to get non-union work, you know, or take some classes somewhere. And so I didn't know what the hell to do. I was just sort of in this weird position where I was either drawing comics or work in film. So I had a friend of mine who worked at the Juilliard School, and we went down to this place called Kettle of Fish in Manhattan, and we were getting really drunk, all of us, and he was there with the head stagehand, and they said, we have an internship for scenic painting for theater. And I said, oh my God, really? So I called up the Juilliard. It was like the last week that they were accepting applications, and I begged and pleaded for them to accept my application. I beat out like 60 other people from around the country with no experience.
Wow.
I never set foot in a theater, and that's how bad I wanted to be a scenic painter, and they let me in. So right after college, I did a year-long internship at the Juilliard School as a scenic painter.
So what were you learning there, that concepts that are used in scenic painting that maybe you didn't know about before?
How to use a goddamn tape measure.
Really?
Yeah. It was a big learning curve. I mean, a scale rule.
What was the skill set that you needed for that, by the way?
Scenic painting, it's basically painting on a large scale. You have to know how to paint the wall. I mean, it's as simple as that. You have to know how to plaster a wall, like plaster seams.
So it's a little bit of construction also. Construction yes. skills with – so are yes. you painting I'm imagining like just backdrops.
It used to be. No, it used to be a lot of backdrops. There's a few shops around New York, like the Metropolitan Opera and Hudson Scenic, that do backdrops, but it's kind of a dying art.
Yeah, because everyone green screen shit or you're –
Oh, yeah. I've painted green screen paint for Men in Black 3, like the entire
– What?
Have you ever seen Men in Black 3? Have you guys seen the movie?
What was the third one? Was that the one with what's her face?
It's where they go back in time.
Simon, Tommy Lee Jones recast.
What's his name? Yeah.
The guy that plays Josh Thanos. Brolin. Josh Brolin. Yeah.
Josh Brolin. Okay, yeah. I remember.
So I'm jumping ahead in time, like one of the episodes of Walking Dead where they just keep jumping forward and backwards in time.
That's fine. The listener can follow. It's non-linear storytelling, people.
Yes. Yes, the Tarantino School of Storytelling.
That's right.
It's what we call next level.
Yes. Next level. Shit.
Men in Black 3 was – I got into the union. It's called the United Scenic Artists, Local 829. I got in about 5 years ago. My first big movie was Men in Black 3, which they filmed all in New York. And we did it up at Kaufman Astoria Studios. There was an armory in Williamsburg, Brooklyn that they use where we worked on the headquarters. But at Kaufman Astoria, which is up in Long Island City, Queens, there was Cape Canaveral. So they built out of steel like the whole launch pad of the rocket ship.
What?
And I worked on the there's a scene where he's fighting what's the bad guy's name in that movie? Boris the Animal. And Boris is fighting Will Smith on top of like this – it was like a crane or something. Yeah. Like we painted that. And then the entire floor of the stage had to be painted blue screen blue paint.
Okay.
It's called DigiBlue paint.
Okay.
So we painted the entire studio floor with blue paint so they could CGI in the rest of Florida and Cape Canaveral. It was insane.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought they just rolled out a sheet.
Special chroma key paints.
No.
Why do they do that instead of something like that? Why do they not roll out a sheet? Why do they paint it? Is there a reason?
Well, I mean, the scenery, you can't. You really can't. It wouldn't make sense because they have, you know, they're rolling cameras and dollies and equipment over the floor, so it would just get caught up in the wheels.
Now are you painting this with a fucking roller or are you doing it like a
yeah. Rollers. We had sprayers. It was insane.
Wow.
Yeah.
How big was that floor then? No, so that's a huge floor.
Oh my God. I'm trying to think. It's probably the size of like a football field.
Holy shit.
How long does that take to paint? How long did that take?
I'm thinking of like a small room.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But I'm like, wait a minute. This is the launch pad of a rocket ship.
No, this shit took like 16 hours to even get one coat on.
No, it wasn't that bad actually. It was like five or six of us. Yeah. We did it in the sections. We didn't do it all at once.
Yeah, this behind-the-scenes shit, I think, is a lot of the stuff people don't realize. Because I've done theater in high school, so I had the opportunity to like be in the cast. But then I also worked crew, and I had painted a background for certain things. And people don't realize the amount of work that you don't see that goes into everything and the hundreds of people that come together. And you just take it for granted. You know, you just see the actor and the action and the director.
Now, let me ask you a question. This is off-topic.
Sure.
When a movie comes out, do you get credit, or is it just called your under umbrella?
No, I'm credited in one movie, Side Effects. It's with Jude Law and Rooney Mara.
Whoa.
I don't know if you guys saw that movie, but
that's Kate Mara's sister, right?
Yes. Yeah.
No.
I'm credited in those credits, but what happened is my union made a deal with, I guess, the other unions, because we get paid a higher rate than the other unions. So in order for that to happen, we can't get listed in the credits.
Wow. Remember who was telling us about the credit trade-off? Oh, it was that dude Bobby Puppet on Blab. He was talking about how people in Hollywood they trade credits. They almost pay each other with, I'll put you on this movie, you put me on that movie, and we do it for each other. So that's interesting how
it's a negotiating tactic.
Yeah, yes. So you can get I'd rather have
I'd rather get the money.
I'd rather get the fucking money. Yeah. Fuck the credit. Yes. Who cares?
Give me the when you see that cash. Paycheck, when you see that overtime paycheck, you're like, I don't give a shit where my name is.
Because at the end of the day, your name just gets lost in the list of names.
Yeah, because nobody fucking sits there and watches that.
No. Oh, I love that Best Boy. His work is amazing.
Marvel makes you watch it.
That's one of my favorite games.
Marvel makes you Marvel. That's Marvel. Yeah. They're making you watch the credits now.
Yeah,
but you're like half paying attention. You're like,
no, you're like looking at yourself.
Yeah,
you're
looking at yourself. I'm like, is there going to be an end credit button scene? Yeah,
there is. Dude,
Nick Fury. I want to see Nick Fury.
Yeah. Fun tip: you ever try this app called Run P on iPhone? So this app's great. Every movie that comes out, it'll tell you exactly when to go pee, when it dies down. It'll explain what's happening. It'll give you the best times when to pee, and it'll also let you know if there's a post-credit scene and if there's more than one and whether you should stay.
So someone's caught an early screening and then
this manual updated. It's an amazing app, though, because you can, if you have to pee, you could set it to vibrate in your pocket at the pee times. Oh, so, like, you hear your phone vibrate, you're like, do I have to pee? Nah, I'll wait for the next one. It's fucking fun. It's a fun way to watch a movie.
It sounds like the beginning of the robot apocalypse.
It might be. Everything is automated. Bilotti, so after your internship, did you find work right away?
I did. I did a lot of non-union paint work. Okay. I bounced around a little bit. Then I went back to Juilliard as a stagehand.
Okay.
And while I was doing that, I decided to get into animation. So me and my brother and two friends created a cartoon called The Stupid Heroes.
Oh.
Which is about superheroes with stupid superpowers.
Oh, fun.
Oh, yeah. Like, for instance.
Yeah. So the Hype was the main character. He can make any room uncomfortably warm. That was his. They were they were real superheroes, and then there were these guys who were like useless. And they all got together in their one bedroom Chinatown apartment and tried to fight crime, but they ended up getting in each other's way. And it was really funny.
That's
really racist.
Is that online?
It's on YouTube.
It is?
It is?
Yeah. It's superheroes. We have to put that in the show notes. I will embed that. Rux, do you remember our useless character we created once back in when we were doing comics?
Yeah, it's Rug Boy.
No, there was another one.
Oh, actually, that credit goes to Alex Smith.
Oh, he came up with that idea?
Yes, because he actually got pissed that I published it, and he came after me.
Well, the last year we were in charge of the school comic book. They had a comic book that was run by students. It was called Static Fish. And so I had a – and then one year I was an editor, and it was a fucking disaster. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Everything got fucked up. But
I was involved.
Yeah, he was involved, and I had stories in the last couple of issues, but we had a page left, so we were going to start this series. It was called Useless Superheroes. It was like number 235. It was it Buoyancy Man?
Buoyant Man.
So
he just floats. That's his only power.
That's all he did. So the strip was this guy was getting mugged, this lady, and he goes, Buoyant Man to the rescue, and he puts on his costume and he just jumps into the river. And the guy's like, he's getting away.
Yeah.
And the Buoyant Man's and the bird's it floats. that was it. I love that.
That was it.
I love Buoyant Man.
But you want to know something that happened is that, not to sidetrack the show and derail everything, but Alex Smith, this guy that I, from Pratt Institute, he one night drunkenly said, that would be a cool superhero. And I remembered it. And then a year later, decided to throw it. He never did anything with it. And I just said, let's make Buoyant Man a useless superhero. He got mad.
Why would he get mad?
Dude, that was my idea. I'm like, yeah, but you never did shit with it. You just mentioned it one night in a bar, and I fucking actually drew the shit and came up with the idea and put the situation together.
And you know what?
He got mad at me.
That's how these ideas come to life.
Yes.
Is when you say something drunken or. I mean, that's how our cartoon started, too. They said, imagine we had this superpower where you can open and close any window, and that became a character.
I love that.
That was a real thing.
Can you go through the list of powers? I'm very curious of the superheroes and what the powers were.
sure, there was the hype, who uncomfortably warm.
Okay.
There was Victor, who can make open or close any window. Bobby, who is invincible while asleep. he was the best character. Then there was his father, Daddy, who could suck anything to him. There was Squid, who was always right. He was never wrong. Bagman, who controlled paper bags. Ziploc was his arch enemy. Obviously, he controlled plastic bags.
Ziploc is awesome.
We had my favorite, who we never got around to, was Aki Taifundo. He looked like Bruce Lee from Game of Death, but he had a zipper in the middle of his stomach. He had like the yellow jumpsuit on.
Yeah.
And he would unzip himself, and a tiny little guy named Scoot would jump out. And that's all his power was. He's a little guy living inside him. So I loved him. There was Dan. There was Dan's, who would make multiple versions of himself, but they're all different sizes. So there was him. And they made like a giant Dan, and then Bobby goes inside his nose and controls him. It was great.
Dude, that's hilarious. Listener, I will put a link to the YouTube channel. I'm running one without the sound right now. It's called The Man with Nor Brains.
Oh, no brains. Oh, that's Bobby. Yeah, little Bobby can drive backwards. That was his superpower.
The little guy.
No, the little guy is Daddy, but his brain got switched with a doll's brain.
Dude, the animation's really good.
Yeah, I took a class. Yeah, here's another story. I took a class at Cooper Union.
Oh, you went to Cooper too? Jesus.
Yeah, well, what happened was we were like, we want to make this cartoon, but we have to do it ourselves. And I was like, well, who's going to animate it? And every eye in the room went on me. I said, well, I don't really have a job right now, so I guess I will. So I bought a Mac. I took a class at Cooper Union in Adobe After Effects, and then I just went to town.
Wait, this is an After Effects?
Yeah, it's all drawn in Adobe Illustrator and animated in Adobe After Effects.
Was Flash around at the time?
No, it was, but I couldn't get into it.
It seems like the long way to do it.
Yeah, how the fuck did you animate this in After Effects? Wow.
After a while, you just start accumulating files and you just reuse the same stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard.
Bonnie likes to do a lot of things the hard way.
Yeah. Well, and let's get
test the mental fortitude.
Speaking of that, that's a great segue because I want to talk a little bit about your process in your Godzilla illustrations. We touched on it a little bit when you were on last, but basically, John does these amazing, intricate, crystal clear, crisp illustrations of Godzilla all by hand without using tools that may make it easier, but he's pretty much in there drawing tiny shapes and breaking apart. So you were talking about, look, I'm working on this, these girls and these other ideas. How do these projects come about? Do you just kind of give yourself projects or are you doing commissions? Where did the idea start from?
I just give myself projects. I don't really push the commission thing because my time is so limited after work and on the weekends that it's like I get paid very nicely for my job. So I don't need the commissions. I mean, it's nice to have them, but I would rather just have the things I want to draw because I'm not looking for a paycheck from this. I'm looking basically to have fun and do these shows and sell them. And then if something great happens, then fine. But I'm not a starving artist. So I get to kind of pick and choose what I want to do. And I'm like, well, I love this movie. Let me just do a poster of this movie. And what are the elements of the movie that I like the most? And then I just put it on a poster. And that's really it. That's where the ideas come from. So
I think that's the best way to do it, by the way. I think
the same process?
Yeah, I think that's a great process because you have to think of what can you lend to this medium now.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, there's a lot of Godzilla shit out there. How am I going to corner the market on something?
Are you thinking commercially when you're coming up with these?
Say that again?
Are you thinking of like the commercial aspects first or like what you kind of want to draw first?
It's a balance because if I do a Monster Zero poster and if I don't have Godzilla, Mothra, and Rodan on that poster, then it's not going to make any sense. So you kind of have to have all those elements on there. And it's also, you know, it's a fine balance. You know, you want to do artsy enough that you're satisfied with it and commercial enough that it's not, you know, overly commercial that like you'd see in, you know, like the cover of like a DVD or something or a generic poster. Mm-hmm. So I just try to have fun with it. I just try to do something that's a little bit different than what's already out there.
Let me ask you something real quick.
Sure.
Robo 7, what's the meaning?
Oh yeah. Where did
that
come from?
Yeah.
That came – there was an old magazine or an old store on the West Coast. I think it's still around, called Super 7. They have like a lot of Japanese – actually, they are still around because I just saw them at New York Comic Con. But my favorite anime of all time is Giant Robo, and one of my favorite characters is Ultra 7. So I just kind of combined the both of them and said, well, it sounds Japanese-y anime-ish enough that it sounds different and fun. I said, let me just go with that and see what happens.
Your process working in Illustrator, were you doing stuff like this before you started the Godzilla work? how did you figure out this style and land on this?
What happened is, as Rugboy was saying, the hard way. I used to do a lot of Photoshop when I was in college. And I mean, man, I could whip out stuff so fast with Photoshop. And I hated Illustrator. When I started doing a cartoon, I was just messing around in Illustrator. And I started making illustrations for the cartoon in Illustrator, and I really liked the look of it. And it was going pretty fast. And then I started getting into the Godzilla stuff. Or no, I started doing the pinup girls. And it would take a little time, but it wouldn't, maybe a couple of days to do one at best. And then I did the first Godzilla thing I did. It took a long time. And I said, you know what?
8 years.
8 years later, I have my first Godzilla. No. That's when I realized, like, holy shit, I met my match. This is a little ridiculous. So I have to really start picking and choosing what I want to show and what I want to draw.
See, I got to give a lot of credit to Bilotti because he captures the essence of the suits.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right? That is what not a lot of artists do.
I know.
He really sticks to it. He really like is kind of like representing in a vector format way now these things stand for the test of time. Like, these vectors are never going to go away. That's, he's always going to have these vectors. He can blow them up and put them on the side of a building. He can do anything he wants with these vectors. He can reposition them, repurpose them.
It's
anytime.
Very smart to do it.
So he's got these images now locked in forever. Like in vector format, whereas a drawing is kind of like fleeting in a way. So he's kind of building up this huge library of all of these different suits, all of these different looks that are totally reverential to the subject matter.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Because that's my goal. I'm not to cut you off here, but
no, go ahead.
One of my biggest pet peeves is a lot of Godzilla art I see is so inaccurate. And some artists capture better than others. I think Arthur Adams captures it amazing, but he gives it enough character that Godzilla looks like an Arthur Adams Godzilla. And I'm like, I want to draw it realistically, but I want to give it like a cartoony anime look at the same time. Yeah. And I see there's a few guys on Facebook that do these really hyper-realistic Godzilla drawings where they copy a photograph and pencil. And I'm like, that looks great. But it's not giving me anything. You're just giving me a sketch of a picture that I've seen a million times.
Right.
Where I might, maybe if I use the same picture, I'll put it on a different background. I'll color it. I'll make it look fun. And also, everyone uses Photoshop. Everybody. Oh. I went to Comic-Con and I walked around that artist alley and almost 9 out of 10 artists had the same goddamn look on everything they did. No disrespect for their talents, but nothing stood out to me. And I saw like 3 vector guys there. And they all blew me away because all their stuff. Look, I want to show you this. Look at it. See this?
Yeah.
That's called Enter the Extras.
Oh, you post that.
Those are the background extras from Enter the Dragon, and this guy did it all on vector. Look at the guy's eyebrow.
That's
great. See the guy's eyes.
So it's like a landscape illustration of the extras in Enter the Dragon, which is a brilliant idea.
And it's a designed realism also.
Yeah, like, and that's what Bilotti does, design realism. Like, your style is definitely, it's a Bilotti-style Godzilla, but it still feels like Godzilla, it's not just a reproduction.
That's now, the just, thing.
Now, just that's, to play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I know this guy. Okay. And his theory is that he doesn't want to draw Godzilla the way that everybody draws it, or the way it's already established. He wants to kind of embody it the way he feels it should be.
Right.
Where do you stand on that?
I think, as I was just telling someone earlier today, I think all art is subjective. And, that's what my opinion of it is, just my opinion. What his opinion that's perfectly fine because I've had people that like my artwork but also say, hey, you know, I like when you draw more from the heart as opposed to like copying a photo or a model kit or something. And I'm like, that's great, but that doesn't – I feel like when I draw these things and I draw it from the heart, it gets a little too cartoony and too, you know – I feel like I get away from what I want to capture, but if that guy can do it and do it well, then more power to him. I mean, you need both.
That's the thing, because you always go back to the medium. You always go back to what exists. You always go back to actually the suits, and you're like, well, what can I do to kind of capture what's in the suits?
Right.
It's really crazy because let's say Bilotti, you like Godzilla from all different ages. What would a Godzilla that you were – you would stitch together look like? That's what I want to see.
That's a good question. That's a good project.
Now, I'm going to give you an assignment.
Yeah, all right, good.
I want to stitch together your Frankenstein Godzilla.
Godzilla.
Yeah, what would be the face that you would use? What would be the spines that you would use? What would be the way that he's hunches? Is he hunch over? Is he standing upright? Is his neck longer? Is his neck smaller? These are all things to consider. If you were tasked, like if you were like a concept artist, you were tasked with coming up with a new Godzilla or coming up with the quintessential Godzilla, what would John Bilotti draw? I want to see that.
That's a great project right there. Because, well, first of all, for the listener, if you're a Godzilla fan or know a Godzilla fan, check out robo7.com. You will love this. And clearly, Bilotti's Godzillas are specific eras of Godzillas. Each one is a different specific era. But I love that idea, Ruggs. We're giving you the job of concept designer for the next Godzilla movie. What's it look like?
I'll do it. I'll take it on.
That's awesome. I will love to see that.
Yeah, okay. I would too.
I will pay money to see that.
And you know what? There's like I said, I go on these Facebook pages and people will post like, you know, their, you know, nightmare Godzilla, and it gets like 2,000 likes. I mean, people go crazy over that stuff too.
Well, I mean, it's everyone's interpretation. Like, different people have drawn Spider-Man for 50 years. It's still Spider-Man. And
you got two schools of people. You got people who are purists that only want to see what's canon.
Right.
What's already been accepted as Godzilla.
That's where I'm, that's me. All right.
Okay. And then you got the people that still think that there's something left on the table. There's still something that can be brought. Now, Anthony, where do you stand on that?
I think Godzilla, I mean,
Do you think Godzilla's been realized properly?
Yeah, but I think there's always room for improvement. I think, I mean, the whole appeal of Godzilla is he's looked different in, like, most every movie. So there's always there's eras of Godzilla. So there's different itinerations. So Godzilla's not – I mean, his baseline features are recognizable, but he always looks different. So I think there's always room for improvement with Godzilla. I always prefer the Heisei Godzilla from, like, Biollante and on to probably, like, Space Godzilla and Destoroyah. I like the huge, like, muscular thought. I like the muscular, like, feral-looking Godzilla. But in my opinion, there's room for all sorts of different itinerations of Godzilla, except the one from 1998.
Yeah,
that doesn't count.
Except the giant iguana. That one didn't count.
I would honestly, I'm actually thinking about it now. I would combine the 2001 GMK Godzilla with the 1964 Mothra Godzilla. To me, those are like the two Godzillas. Like when you think of like a nightmare nuclear menace, like those two just come to mind right away. Mm-hmm. I think the Heisei one, the 89 and 91 versions were amazing. And then he kind of got a little too cartoony towards like Space Godzilla. He was getting a little too goofy looking.
They made his eyes bigger, and they made him more fatherly.
Yeah, it was like Son of Godzilla looking. Right, it was just getting a little weird. So those are the two.
I would love to see what your interpretation.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool project.
I would want to see Bilotti-Zilla.
Bilotti-Zilla. We need to see Bilotti-Zilla. I think your fans would love that. And speaking of meeting your fans, I know you're about to go to a comic book convention. Now, listener, when this show posts, this convention will have happened already. So, as much as we want to promote, going out to see
– assholes.
Yeah. just what Rugboy said. But what's this convention coming up, and what are you looking forward to?
What is it? The New Jersey Comic Expo. It's the first time they're doing it in New Jersey. They were doing it in Long Beach, California. I'm in Artist Alley. It's the first time I'm doing it because obviously it's the first time they've ever done it. So we're all doing it for the first time together. What I think it is, I think it's going to be big because Comic-Con just happened in New York, the big one, and it sold out within minutes.
Yeah.
And there were so many people there, and it wasn't even fun.
It left
it was
a so bad taste in some people's mouths.
Everybody, Imran. Yeah. I was just like, I met Arthur Adams there, and that was like the highlight of my life in terms of like nerdgasms.
Yeah.
You know? But that was it. That was Artist Alley was the highlight for me. So I think everyone that got pissed off at New York Comic Con is going to just go to this one because they can. Mm. And it's going to be it's like the first big con in the tri-state area since New York Comic Con. So I'm excited. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm praying to God I sell something because I just dropped like almost $250 on prints. So I'm hoping I sell.
You'll move them. Your shit is tight.
I have a I've been involved somewhat in the comic industry for a very long time, in and out before my sickness took over.
Your felty syndrome?
My feltiness. My syndrome.
Your syndrome.
Kicked in. When I was in my 20s, before it fully like took over, I was involved in a lot of conventions. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with this convention, but I'm looking at the guest list, and the guest list is ridiculous.
Who's coming?
Yeah. Growing.
Everybody's going. So, I mean, I don't have the list in front of me so I can rattle off names because I don't want to like say something out of, that's not correct.
I'm pulling it up here.
I don't think it's saying anything out of the ordinary. It's saying that this is going to be a very cool convention. It's the first time I've heard of it, but I'm going to be there.
Dude, so I'm going to read a couple of things off. This has already happened. You will have, when you hear this, listener, they'll have seen Amy Acker, the Back to the Future DeLorean, Mark Bagley artist. The 66 Batman car and the Tumblr will be there. Let's see who else we got here. Rob Bruce, Jim Calafiore will be there.
I don't know. Todd DeZago.
Is DeZago here? Yeah, right there. DeZago's gonna be there.
And Craig Rousseau.
And Craig Rousseau, Drea DiMatteo.
Jim Lee. Jim Lee is like a huge name. Like, don't fucking gloss over Jim Lee.
Well, I didn't even see Jim Lee's name. The Ecto-1 Ghostbuster car will be there.
We're only in the D's and E's right now.
Yeah. So wow, there's a lot of cars that. Jamal Igel. We just talked about Jamal Igel. He'll be there. Kit. Wow, all the fucking nerd cars will be there. That's amazing. That's kind of fun.
I love it that New Jersey's having some fucking new conventions.
Rags Morales will be there. Rags. Fabian Nicieza, another great artist, will be there. Carl Parts, Ivan Rice.
Ivan Rice.
Dude, this is huge. There's Craig Rousseau. Wow. Tito Santana, wrestling legend.
I thought he was arrested. I thought he was going to jail, Tito Santana.
I think they're letting him out for this. Walt Simonson and Luis Simonson.
Just stop right there, Walt Simonson.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Just stop Walt Simonson. He's a fucking legend.
He's a legend. Fantastic Four. Frog Thor.
If you don't know shit about art, just look up Walt Simonson.
Fucking Jim Lee and Walt Simonson. This is an amazing New Jersey Comic Expo.
Just those two names alone. You are going to have a great getting in the car and driving.
You're going to have a great time. This is very interesting because we've kind of been having this ongoing discussion about comic book conventions and the state that we are and these new ones popping up. We had just talked to our friend Daniel Moses, also known as Flea. She works for a company that runs the Indianapolis Comic Con, the Tampa Bay Comic Con, and they added a new one. Very interesting. Guess where? San Francisco Comic Con. Thinking the same kind of philosophy. You can't get tickets to San Diego unless you buy them the instant they are there. They're hoping they're going to pull people that got maybe, and maybe it's too big and it's too intimidating. They're hoping they're going to pull people who just want to go to a smaller con.
Listen,
I hope so, because the New York Comic Con, there were cosplay kids walking around. So basically they got a ticket that maybe some real comic fan couldn't get.
Yeah, and they don't care.
And they're walking. They don't care. They're walking. Yeah. I had those like aisles and aisles of the Javits Center I could not walk down because there were a bunch of like Naruto kids walking around stinking up the place. They don't even know what's going on. By the time I got to like the comic book section, there was nobody there. They're just there to put on a show and like have photos taken of them. They're not real fans. They're all these new kids.
They should start calling it Comic-Con. They should start calling it Costume-Con.
That sounds frustrating and annoying. Shit.
You know what? Like, this is the thing. Like, unfortunately, what happens is somebody takes something good and makes it into something shitty.
Like the Hell's Angels. They started really good and pure, then they got into the drugs, and then they just ruined it all.
Well, whatever. Anything, I think the Joker said it the best, or whoever. Actually, I think Harvey Dent said it best in Batman The Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you just stick around and be a hero long enough, you'll be a villain.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah. Exactly.
Great line. Great line.
Thanks, Tony.
Good job, Tony.
You're here for
high five.
I don't know why I'm here, but I'm here for this.
He's the only one that's sober out of all of us. That's why.
That's the line. All right, but like, okay. So this is what happens. This New York Comic Con was so necessary because New York didn't have a big convention. They had like the Big Apple Con and this and that. But if you've ever been to Big Apple Con, it's in like this hotel, and it's really shitty. So like to have a big space like the Javits Center and everything, that's like what you want in the Comic Con. You want to be able to just breathe. You want to be able to walk around. This motherfucking convention is packed with people who have no interest in comics. Ugh, none whatsoever. It's like costume con. It's like, hey, let me take a selfie. Let me show myself in this costume. And no one gives a shit about comics. I go and talk to the creators. I go and talk. I was at the Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I went and talked to like a million people. And they were like, business is okay. Not great. But I'm like, but it's record numbers here.
Yeah.
Record numbers. There's fucking people fucking like stacked 10 deep to get in.
Nobody's buying shit, though. They're not there to buy shit or actually, yeah.
So
they don't care.
Not translating into like actual fandom. You would go up to any of these kids and ask them about anything about comics, they wouldn't know.
They don't know shit. They're the movie fans. That's who they are.
That's the thing, though, about like New York and San Diego is that it's so mainstream that it draws the movie fans now, and it draws the TV show fans. So there are a lot of people that are there just for the announcements and to see footage, and they're not big on comics at all. It's a different medium. It's
the line for the DC Warner Brothers TV shows that was going to show footage of Supergirl and all that stuff was like a mile and a half long.
Wow.
Just go home and wait, and it'll show it online an hour later.
It'll be on the internet.
Fuck,
dude. Well, you know, on the plus side, if you think about it, I think this has opened up an opportunity for people to start these smaller, more dedicated cons that are more specific and maybe niche-driven for the true hardcore fans.
Which that's what this convention in New Jersey sounds like. It sounds like, hey, let's get back to
it. It's more of a grassroots thing.
Yeah.
But they do have a cosplay contest, so they're still kind of like playing that angle. But
yeah,
fuck, that sounds fucking annoying to go to. Like I don't want to go to something like that.
Conventions used to be about the books. Yeah. Now it's about the people that are going to the convention.
Yeah,
I remember waiting in line.
That's when you fucking lose the whole point of it.
Do you think people still? I remember waiting in line for like over an hour to get Todd McFarlane's autograph. Does that shit still happen with an artist these days?
It does.
It does. There were lines in Artist Alley for artists.
The hardcore fans are always going to be there. But the people that are there solely to get attention for themselves, they're there as well.
Meanwhile, the convention people are like, fuck, we'll take your money. I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. The Godzilla actors were there.
Ooh.
And I went there on Thursday. First of all, I went on the opening day. And when I went to San Diego Con back in 06, and I went on opening day. And it was like a ghost. It wasn't a ghost town, but you could walk around, you could talk to people. And as the days went on, as the weekend came closer and closer, they got more and more packed. This fucking thing, on Thursday night at like 2:30 in the afternoon, it was fucking mobbed. It was mobbed. And I managed to go meet the Godzilla actors, and I talked to them, and there wasn't a line. But the next day, there was a massive line to meet the Godzilla actors, which for me was great because I love that. That means that people love Godzilla. They want to meet these people. There's a market for it. You know, like for me, that was fine. But everything else, like you couldn't even walk in there. Wow. You could not walk.
It was impossible to have a good time at the.
It was.
Wow.
It was. And this is like my third time at the New York Comic Con, and I've had good experiences there in the past, but this was the worst. This was the absolute.
People that took me there wanted to literally choke me to death, and I brought them there.
You're like,
I believe it.
Fuck you, Felty. How could you bring us here? Ruggs, are you going to New Jersey?
I'm gonna go check out John Belotti.
Do you have any of you have any of our cards left?
I do.
Take those with you, please.
I will pass them out.
Thank you,
sir. Give me your cards. I'll put them on my table.
Right there, we go.
Oh,
that's called the cross promotion.
Jock and Nerd alumni are going to be there. Todd DeZago is going to be there.
Oh, right on. You know what? Maybe
should do a podcast from now.
Well, after the show, Ruggs, remind me. I might just have you record some audio on your phone from people.
I'll give it a shot.
Okay, it'll be very easy. Just put the phone in their mouth. I would love to hear Todd say hi.
Put my phone in Todd's mouth.
Put your phone in Todd's mouth and insert gently.
Hey Todd, let me stick a phone in your mouth.
Hold on a second.
That's great. I'm gonna play some sweeper music, and we're just gonna geek out about shit. What do you say, fellas?
Sure. I think it's a great idea.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Hey, I found this article here. It's from IO9. This is the upcoming Toho Godzilla movie will feature the biggest Godzilla ever.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
What are your thoughts? We got to get the expert, Pilati. What are your thoughts on
that? That's me. So my thoughts on the whole Godzilla
resurgence.
I want to hit on the Toho Godzilla. I want to hit on the new Gamera trailer that came out, and I want to hit on his thoughts on the Godzilla King Kong crossover. So,
oh, I have a lot to say about that. I have so much. Like, let's just keep recording for like until like midnight, because
I got plenty of digital tape. No, I'm just kidding. Don't worry.
The Shin Godzilla. I won't call it Godzilla Resurgence.
So in Japan, let's explain to people. Yeah. It's called Shin Godzilla, and it Shin says Godzilla. Translated has
which is
several.
About Godzilla's legs under his knees.
What about me? I like kneecap Godzilla.
I say Godzilla had cankles, so I don't really ever. I don't remember seeing
cankles.
No, actually, the way it translates out in Japanese, from what I know, is that Shin Godzilla or Shin Gojira.
Gojira.
They're spelling it Gojira, not spelling it Godzilla. They're spelling it Gojira. Basically means either the true Godzilla, the real Godzilla, or something else.
New Godzilla, they call it.
This is not a reboot. This is still Godzilla.
So this is either like they're setting the tone for Godzilla.
So basically, they mean new is like this is the new era of Godzilla, maybe, right. Or the true. Yeah. They're going back to the. By the way, it was we just had a 61st birthday, right? Godzilla.
Yes, it was
61 Absolutely. Years ago.
Yeah.
So
he's an old man.
Bilotti, what do you think about this old guy?
I'm very excited for the Japanese movie. I am like quaking to see this movie because you have Shinji Higuchi, who directed the special effects of the Gamera trilogy, which we talked about, and that guy is unbelievable. And he just did Attack on Titan, which was like it looked like a lot of people were divided on the movie because the anime fans are like, it's not like the anime, so it sucks. And then the people that never saw the anime are like, oh, it's a good sci-fi movie. So I haven't seen it yet. I've seen clips of it.
I've seen it.
How is it, Rogue Boy?
When you see it, you do see potential because just the cinematography of it, the staging and this and that are very on a different level than what you've seen from Japan.
Right.
Like, if you put it in context with American movies, it's not that impressive. But if you put it in context with Japanese filmmaking, it's actually kind of groundbreaking for them.
Was it CGI heavy or
it's
no?
Like a combination of CGI, like real people. Wow. Like, well, if you don't know what the concept of Attack on Titan basically is, there's a bunch of people living in this walled city. And these giant humans called Titans come in and break the walls down, and the tiny humans have to like fight them off. Like basically, like these humans are Godzilla sized people. Mm. All right, and these little humans have with these little like little jet packs and this and that have to go fight them off with guns and swords and shit. They have like a little weakness in the back of their neck. They got to slice it, and then they die. So, if you look at it in an American movie standpoint, with what we can do, like Americans got more money, more talent, more freaking just dollars thrown at the screen, like it's nothing impressive. But if you look at it in the context of Japanese filmmaking, it's impressive.
Is that movie? Is it subtitled or dubbed?
Not yet. They just released it in like a couple limited theaters over here, subtitled. But that's about it. Okay. So far, it'll probably be released soon.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I saw like a 6-minute scene where Eren becomes a Titan and he starts fighting the other ones, and it looked like War of the Gargantuas. And I was like, oh my god, this looks like a modern War of the Gargantuas. Was an old, the same guys that made Godzilla made War of the Gargantuas. Yep. These two hairy brothers that look like
they're Italian.
They're Italian. It's like me and Rugby.
They were actually like spin-offs of Frankenstein.
So the director Shinji Higuchi is a huge Toho fan. So I have faith in the new movie because of that. And plus he has this movie under his belt, which is really good. And he has, what's his name? The guy that directed, the guy that created Evangelion. The name's not coming to my mind, but he's Hideaki Anno is co-directing the new Godzilla movie and co-writing it. So I feel like whatever Shinji Higuchi lacks, this guy can step in and say, well, how about we try it like this? Because he's like an actual director.
Hmm. What do you think the tone is going to be? I mean, they're marketing scariest Godzilla ever.
It's going to be dark. They're going to go.
Well, okay. If you saw the Gamera trailer,
yep,
it's going to be in that vein. I think Gamera got there first.
Yeah.
Which takes a lot of the wind out of the sails of Godzilla, by the way, because their trailer came out first, and they're trying. I think they're going to do. I don't know if they're doing man in suit or CGI yet. I think it's going to be a combo,
right? Yeah,
they're doing a combo. Here's the thing with these Godzilla movies. They'll never be what you want them to be. Like, I have a feeling this movie's going to be good, but I have a feeling people are going to complain about something. Because it'll never be as good as the way they used to be. Like, everybody wants to relive the old movies or the 90s movies, and this movie will be missing something, and somebody will complain about it. And honestly, it comes down to Toho. If they give these guys the time to do it, it'll be good. Because the Gamera trilogy, they said the director of the Gamera trilogy, Shisuke Kaneko's name is, he said, you know, I work for Toho, I made a Godzilla movie, I work for Daiei, and I made three Gamera movies. He said, I got no money to make the Gamera movies, but I had time. With Toho, I got all the money, but I had no time. Yeah. So they have to give these guys time to make this movie right, because now you're competing with a Hollywood Godzilla. So you can't just – they turn these movies around in like 9 months or something or less.
Yeah.
It's insane. That's insane. Men in Black 3 was like a year and a half long just to film it and actually just to build it, film it. Edit it. I mean, it was a year and a half of work. And
sometimes you can tell when they don't put enough time into things.
Oh, yeah.
It's right clear. Away. Now,
there's a shooting schedule for the actors, and there's a shooting schedule for the people who do post-production, who do all the graphics.
Right.
So they have to, like, sandwich in all this stuff in one shot, like, in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
I hope they give them the time, because now they have big shoes to fill. You're going up against the legendary Godzilla, and that wasn't, you know, as bad as... As much as I didn't care for that movie, special effects wise, it was very impressive.
It was on point, special effects.
Yeah,
Ruggs, you make a good point about this Gamera trailer hitting first, because it said in the article, summer 2016 for the Toho Godzilla estimated release. I'm watching this Gamera trailer. They beat them to the punch, and this is fucking awesome. Actually, this trailer is amazing.
Yeah, let's get your guys' thoughts on this.
I would go see this.
Well, look. Let's do the caveat. Let's just throw it out there. Let's say what needs to be said is that if you compare it to American special effects, this shit is like 5 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least 10 years old.
Like, it doesn't special bother effects, me.
And no, this the shit special, looks good. This, to me, the special – I mean, comparing it to American, you can tell. You can definitely tell.
Yeah. Like, American special effects, if you're going to do it, if you're fucking Steven Spielberg, you're going to nail it. I mean, as much as you want to shit on the Godzilla, the 2014 movie, the special effects in that movie for the 8 minutes that he was on screen were fucking perfect.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But you know what though? There's Hollywood movies there's Hollywood movies with heavy CGI that suck.
Yes,
absolutely.
Sometimes CGI ruins it.
Yeah, how come Terminator 2 from 1991? And Jurassic Park from 1990, was it 4 or whatever? Yeah. Still look better than movies that are being released now.
Well, that's a good point. It still holds up. But this is what I'm starting to think is there's a certain charm given to the feel of the movie when you use those practical effects more. And, you know, you're saying that the Japanese effects aren't up to par. I don't think that's necessarily – this fucking trailer looks awesome. I don't think that's a bad thing because – The kind of stop motion guy in a suit, like, you kind of want that. It's part of the culture. It's part of the charm.
No, but that's all CG though. The Gamera trailer is all CG.
That's all CG.
Yeah,
so actually for me, I'm gonna have to disagree. I kind of didn't like the Gamera trailer. I like the tone, but I can tell it's all CG.
It looks like a video game.
It looks too much like a video game. And what I like about the Japanese films is the man in the suit.
Right? So there's that. You want that charm.
So I want that. I want the CG to enhance that.
Let's just say
all
what no one wants to say is that if Stan Winston was alive,
yeah,
and he was allowed to do whatever he wanted to do with Godzilla, and he had the money to make whatever Godzilla suit that he wanted to make, that shit would blow away anything that fucking Japanese have done, anything the Americans have done, because Stan Winston always brings the fucking goods. He always animates things that should not be animated. That Predator, that, just think about all Alien.
Did he do Jabba the Hutt? Who did Jabba? That was an amazing. That's an amazing. That's like eight guys it took to work Jabba. And it looks amazing.
That's what it takes.
Yeah.
And they did everything.
Something. Yeah.
They did practical and CGI. And to me, that's the best combination.
That's why this new Star Wars is going to rock. Because they at one point had
Stan Winston in cahoots to make Godzilla, and they never did it.
Yeah.
And there is even a model of the Stan Winston Godzilla somewhere out there on the net that you can check it out.
It looks cool. It looks really cool.
I wonder, who is following in his footsteps? Is there another Stan Winston? Or is that like, I don't even feel like in this country that's on the radar to try to put a guy in a suit and make it look good anymore.
You know what? Towards the end, Stan Winston, his company was sort of downsizing. There was the other guy, Rick Baker, who worked on...
Yeah, Baker's good too,
Yeah, his crew was on Men in Black 3, and I just missed when they started filming, and I was done with the job, and I was going to come in the next day to watch them film. I wanted to meet Will Smith, and all of those aliens were on set, and I was like, I'm going to stay home. I'm not going to go. So I missed out on all that.
Oh, no.
But he was there, and all those practical effects guys were there. But, you know, if you read some interviews with Stan Winston, he says, like, his business is sort of dying off. He's like a dying breed.
Because it's cheaper and quicker, I guess, to do it all CGI. And people think you could just click a button.
Cheaper. It's just that you have more control.
Control and the timing to create all this.
But then the wrong people have more control. You got the studio heads and the marketing people have control, and they fuck everything up.
Don't get me going.
I kind of want to get John going because
don't take it down this path. Okay. I wanted to know what your thoughts were on Gamera. Like, what's your impressions of this new Gamera movie, John?
The Gamera movie is, well, right now, the trailer looks the way it does because it's called a proof of concept trailer.
Even a real fucking thing.
Yeah, they're basically saying, hey, this is what we can do if you give us money. That's what that trailer is. It's not what the actual film is going to look like.
Okay.
But that's the tone. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, the CGI, it is what it is. It just looks like the one scene in Gamera 3 where he lands in Tokyo and he blows away the Gauss birds, and he's stepping on people. It just looks like they took that scene and are just making a movie out of that scene. And I'm kind of like, they're like, what are you really bringing with Gamera? You're just sort of copying what those guys did. Because by the third Gamera movie, it became like he became like a real monster, and it was a frightening concept. And now it's like they're taking that and making a movie of, which is like, okay, if you're going to make a Gamera movie, you might as well just copy from that, because you're not going to get a better representation. Yeah,
that's what I felt too. Is I saw it and I was like, "There's nothing original." Like they took
new.
They took that scene and they took the scene where you could see all the Gaios flying towards whatever city that was at the end.
Yeah,
and there's a swarm of them. Yeah. And I was like, they just copied a couple of those scenes. I mean, I don't mind that tone for Gamera. I actually kind of liked those. I mean, those three movies were fucking awesome.
Oh, amazing.
So, I mean, I don't mind seeing that tone, but I'm not seeing anything new.
Well, what Gamera movie do you guys want to see? What should be the new Gamera movie?
Look, anything with Gamera, basically what Shuzuke Kaneko had done in the Gamera movies was fucking amazing. Now, he blended 3D effects with practical effects. And he had like a lot of the Gaios and all these flying, like, you know, bad guys animated in 3D.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to see the level of detail that we did in this Gamera trailer. I can almost feel like you can edit parts in, like edit shots in and back and forth from like Gamera 3 into this movie. So we're not seeing anything new, but we're seeing another version of what had transpired already.
And plus, with that original trilogy, you had every kind of Gamera that you can do in that trilogy. Because the first movie, he was like the friend of mankind. He looked like a big puppy dog with his big eyes, and he was cute. Then the second movie, he gets a little bit more badass, and he's like facing an unstoppable opponent, but he perseveres.
Yeah.
And the third movie, he becomes total badass. He looks like a real creature for once. And he's not evil, but he doesn't really care too much about humanity like he used to. And it's like, okay, you got three different cameras. Like, what else can you do? It's almost like
that's what I'm getting at too. Is have we already seen the best of Gamera? Because as you mentioned, that first film was straight for kids, not for kids, but it was more kiddie. The second film was straight sci-fi, like an Aliens feel. And the third one was like a horror movie.
It's kind of like Aliens.
A serious horror
movie. Serious horror movie. So have we already seen the best of Gamera?
Two questions. Yeah. What's Gamera's origin story again?
So he's basically Earth's protector.
He's like the Gollum.
Yeah.
You know, like
he's from the Earth.
He's literally in the three films, he draws energy from like the Earth's mana. So he is literally – he was created to protect.
Who created him?
People.
The Atlantis.
People.
Oh,
they made the Gauss bird. They made the Gauss bat bird, whatever it is, first, and it started eating people.
Yeah.
And it started multiplying at an alarming rate. So they said, we need to make something to fight it. So they made a giant turtle that could fly and blow fire. And that's
just like in Chicago, we have like a deer overpopulation problem. What is their answer? Hey, let's bring in coyotes to eat the deer. And now we have a fucking coyote problem. In the city, exactly. Like you see coyotes eating fucking rabbits.
The best scene from that Gamera 3, well, there's numerous great scenes, but the scene right in the beginning where you see all the dead Gamera shells on the bottom of the ocean, it was like they've had so many Gameras fighting.
So then what should be Gamera 4? What should this movie be? What would you guys want to see?
That's what I'm wondering. Have we already seen the best?
Is this even necessary?
We've seen the best.
Yeah, I don't know if we need to see anymore.
Rehash, just make the first movie again better or something?
It's like making the Back to the Future trilogy. Like you have no reason to remake or add on to those movies. They're fine as they are.
But where do you stand on 3D effects? Where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on computer graphics? Do you think that that's the best way to go, or do you think it's man in suit only?
I think it's a combination. I think in Gamera 3, they were hitting it right on the head with combining both of it, like both of those effects. I think if they can somehow figure out a way to combine them really, really well, to me, that would sell it more.
My opinion is that Japanese, and this is going to piss you off, but I'm just being honest.
All right.
I feel like Japanese suitmation or animatronics or whatever you want to call it is not – if you take out the suit design, it's not up to par.
Right.
I feel like that there's not mobility. There's no expressiveness. There's not a lot of things that the person can do in the suit. Like, it just looks good, and that's all it does. It just looks great, but it's not functional in any way. It doesn't emote. It doesn't do anything in the way that you'd want it to in this day and age. And I hate CG graphics when – especially if you can do it right practical. I hate that. But why can't we find, like, American-level – animatronics in Japanese stuff? Like, is it just a question of money, or is it
money?
Know-how?
Money, for sure.
It's money. It's 100% money.
Yeah.
They don't have the budgets.
What
like
are
we
these?
Do
what are the budgets on these movies?
Like $1 million.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a lot at all.
It's like 1/100th.
Oh my god!
It's a big studio film.
I think Godzilla Final Wars was the most expensive they've ever made, and it was like $16 million. That's not even a low-budget movie over here.
No. You can't make a commercial for $16 million.
Think about it. It's $16 million, and they're making a giant monster movie. Like it's not $16 million on a drama.
Yeah.
It's shot in Chicago.
It needs to be 60, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it needs to be so much more.
If America just knew this, let's say America just funded Japanese Godzilla movies. Yeah. Like, not even American Godzilla, but just be like, listen, let's throw you fucking like $5 million just to make this better and to get this back on top of the like the Japanese movie charts.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why they don't make bigger budgets. Like we buy all the shit that's made in Japan. Like it seems like they should have money.
I watched that documentary that you referred me to, John, about
what's it called?
From Kaiju Cast, the guy that made it.
Oh yeah,
Hail to the King.
And it conveyed to me that even though Godzilla is in Japan, it's not that big in Japan.
It's not.
Yeah, it's
and plus they
niche.
Don't have the population. They don't have the population
going
that we do.
Movies.
We have like 300 million people in our country alone.
Yeah.
Japan is like what, like 70 million or something?
I wonder
something?
What their like box Jersey. Office is. Yeah.
It is like New Jersey.
Wow.
So really, Godzilla is like a niche thing in Japan. So that's why the budgets for these movies.
Yeah, and then what's
huge.
Fascinating is this Chinese movie market now is blowing up movies left and right. Movies, Terminator Genesis got a sequel only because it killed in China.
Did it really?
Yes. Ant-Man, once it opened in China, they were like, fuck it, we're making a sequel.
China loves a Western.
This new
Pacific Rim, too.
Yeah, so, and I feel like this is kind of new in the last couple of years that the you have the overseas market, but now you have a China market. And people, I feel the problem is American studios are going to make shit movies because they know it's going to play huge in China.
They've been doing, I mean, Dark Knight had a scene specifically for the Chinese market. Iron Man 3 had scenes that were only in the Chinese market.
All right, fucking let's get into this because when I booked this thing with Bilotti, he goes, oh, what are we going to talk about? The big Hollywood money grab? And I was like, there's a topic right there.
I know. I see you keep baiting me. You want to get me going.
I want to know what you really think of the state of Hollywood.
And then we'll get to the new Godzilla King Kong.
Plus, because he's got a behind the scenes look at things. So you can really tell us like what's going on.
I'll say, all right. Without getting myself fired from my job.
Well, don't do that.
No. From what I understand from the older scenic artists that I've worked with, now to explain what a scenic artist is, we paint the sets. We paint faux, we do like faux marble, fake wood, fake concrete, fake snow. Everything's fake. So that's what we do. From what the old guys tell me, you know, it used to be not a free-for-all, but it was a little looser. You had people that were running studios that were artists. You had filmmakers that were running studios. Now they have accountants and lawyers running studios.
See, that's it.
So they're counting money like crazy. I work on the TV show The Blacklist.
Yeah.
And this season, they're counting their pennies. They don't want us to work certain hours. They don't want to do certain sets. They don't want to pay us. I love the job. Don't get me wrong. But it's a business.
The culture is changing.
Yeah, and plus Wall Street got involved. Marvel Studios went down to Wall Street and said, if you give us like $500 million, we're going to make these movies. They're like, okay, but you have to have this, this, this in your movie. That's how Marvel got its funding. They went down to Wall Street and met all these brokers and got their funding. It's basically they have multi corporate interests now. You know, now they have like four different – like Viacom owns like half of Hollywood. I think they own us. They own all of us. We're all working for Viacom.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Viacom is huge. There's like three companies that own everything, dude.
Disney. Disney owns like the other half.
Disney, Viacom, GE.
It's just big, but it's more and more they're going under these three umbrellas, and those umbrellas are merging. And you're right. The problem is, I feel like these corporate guys are running the marketing, and they're telling the guys, "Hey, put two big heads on the poster. Make one side orange. Make one side teal."
You know what? Thing is though, is that that's what made these Star Wars trailers really refreshing. It doesn't seem like Abrams isn't listening to the to the traditional trailer marketing aspects, and he's just I mean, we don't know anything about this movie.
Bilotti, you pretty much confirmed what I've been feeling and seeing is this shift in culture. And it's just – it scares me because it's a slippery slope where a big dumb movie like Jurassic Park can make billions of dollars, pretty much giving everyone the go-ahead to like, oh, just make big stupid movies. They're going to make money. It doesn't have to be good. Nobody cares about characters or story.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing with the China market – is that they keep kissing China's ass. And what kind of scares me is that we're going to have movies with scenes that take place in China for no reason whatsoever. I haven't been to China. I don't know if you guys have been to China.
Nope.
The guy that cuts my hair, he's Chinese, so he goes to China. That's about the only connection I have to China. I'm an Italian from Staten Island, so I don't really relate to that. And I can't see how someone watching a movie, an American movie in Wyoming, is going to relate to like a whole scene that takes place in China. But they're only doing it so they can have their movie played in China because the Chinese government regulates what foreign movies can be shown over there. And the thing is, China's not going to be the market they think it is because they only allow like 12 foreign movies a year or something like that. So it's not as much money as they think it's going to be, but they keep kissing their ass, you know, hoping to get the Chinese dollar.
Iron Man 3 specifically had a Chinese scene only movie.
Yeah, they're already doing that. They're pandering to it. That is interesting and kind of a slippery slope there.
Was Avengers Age of Ultron, do you think they – was that Asian lady Chinese?
She was Korean.
Korean, okay. I'm sorry.
But again, it's like, all right, you're throwing an Asian doctor in there that nobody knows who she is. I think she was in the comics, but it doesn't really matter because nobody knows. But they're putting an Asian in there just to get the Asian market.
Right.
And to me, that's just like – that's a big slap in the face. I don't know why. It just bothers me.
In the meantime, they're afraid to put out like that fucking Kim Jong-il assassination comedy that was completely stupid, that we almost had a political international incident over this dumb fucking movie. that was not that bad at all. Like, really? That,
well, it was North Korea funny. Threatening.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying. It's but our, you know, we want the dollar, but we'll fucking we'll cave at the slightest hint of whatever.
You know when I got a whiff of this, when I started worrying, is, do you remember the Red Dawn remake that came out a couple years ago? That movie was supposed to come out, I think, in 2012 or something like that. And what happened was they made China and Russia the villains of that movie. And what happened was they were afraid of pissing off the Chinese and the Chinese investors. So they went back and re-edited all of the Chinese soldiers to have like North Korean flags. And yeah, just so they wouldn't piss off the Chinese. I'm like, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. It's like, have some fucking balls. If you're going to make that, you made that movie with a certain intention. Now you tell me like North Korea is invading us. It's scary if it's China. It doesn't work if it's North Korea.
Right. No, it doesn't.
I mean, it makes more sense to have North Korea because of the way they are. But at the same time, I just thought that was like
they don't have the numbers to do it.
But you know what?
They don't have
the numbers. Conspiracy theorists to me. Also, I sometimes take a step back and I look at media. Sometimes even entertainment as propaganda, like just
I know what you're doing. You're doing it again.
But they're getting us. they're getting us accustomed to something. They're getting us comfortable to something. They're getting us used to something.
I'm going to go right into it. My brother is the one who pointed a lot of this out, and I just started paying attention and I started researching it. It's the United States military.
Yep.
If you watch every movie since 9/11. There was this – I remember when 9/11 happened and everything was going crazy in the country. I remember a news report saying how the government has met up with some Hollywood studio bosses, and they didn't say exactly what it was. But I think right after 9/11 happened, Black Hawk Down came out.
Yep.
And every movie after 9/11 was showing the military as like superheroes. Every movie now has like the military in a very heroic, proud light, you know? And in reality, like 22 veterans a day are committing suicide?
Yeah, because they're not getting taken care of. They're not getting the support. They're giving their lives, and they come back, and they're tossed away. I mean, look at American Sniper. That is a clearly propaganda movie. Because you look into Chris Kyle, this is not a guy you maybe want to make a movie about.
I just want to say that the institution may be bad, but I think the people who sign up and actually have to give their lives, I think that we gotta show them some kind of
work. Yeah, it's not their fault. It's the
institution.
The institution does not take care of them. The point being, people, when you're watching these movies, I feel like you kind of need to be aware of this, because the more this is absorbed and you're not aware of what they're trying to sell you, you start believing the propaganda, and then
jump in here real quick?
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to say, because I don't want you to drink the Kool-Aid, because what happens is, for example, like anything, you could take any public funded thing, military, education, anything. The education has this agenda of covering its own ass. Whatever it has to do to get that is what they do. So if they have to shit on the people that do everything, they're going to shit on the people that do it. If they have to like put them in a positive light and like glorify them, that's what they do. They do anything that's possible to keep their institution going.
Right.
And you have to understand that. The police are the same way. All of that stuff. They do shit. There's dirty cops. There's people who take money. There's people who fucking look the other way. Blah, blah, blah. It's a known thing. But when you when you show cops on TV, you got to glorify them.
Well, here's... I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. The thing that I wanted to add, most importantly, is I think I talked about in the last show I was with you guys, the Pentagon has a Hollywood division where they go and they'll fund movies if it puts a positive spin on the military. Like Battle Los Angeles was funded by the Marines. The Marines said, we need to get our numbers up, recruitment numbers up. So they funded that movie. I don't think they funded the entire thing, but they had a large portion of that.
Why are they funding such shitty movies?
Because you got, again, now you don't have accountants running Hollywood. You have military guys running Hollywood.
Nobody knows that this movie is not going to make any money. Like, I can tell you that.
Well, on top of that, too, though, is if you've seen Avengers, they never explicitly mentioned the military, is because the military didn't want any part of that movie.
They didn't
like the whole
superheroics.
Well, no, not that. They didn't like the whole Illuminati aspect of it, and the shield, and like that the council. They didn't like that.
You know
stuff.
Why? It may hit a little too close to home, people.
Yeah, the conspiracy theorist over here.
Well, what about the Transformer movies? They're like
Those are huge military ads. Yeah.
He bends over backwards for the Pentagon. Like he makes them look amazing. Like he makes Saul want to sign up to fight robots. He's unbelievable.
That was a huge ad from the military, and I think it was like Ford or whatever car. Yeah, it was a huge push. Yeah, whatever the car maker was, I think it was Ford. So
yeah, so it's all in
General Motors.
Yeah, General Motors. There we go. GM. It was GM. Yep.
That's just, I mean, I just hope people are aware and like that this is going on, but
it's not even subliminal anymore. No, it's overt.
It's
not.
It's so overt. There's
I was just watching a lot of times when I draw, I just put on a TV and I had the remake of Red. I keep bringing up Red Dawn because I just watched it and it had every single cliche we're talking about was in this movie. And there's a scene where, you know, the rebel American fighters, who's led by an Australian, by the way, because Thor's in that movie.
Oh.
They meet up with these like retired Marines, and there's this one Marine who's like a Southern guy, and he's like, "We're United States Marine, boy. There's nothing more dangerous than a Marine and his rifle." And every line out of this guy's mouth is a line like this, like just total propaganda. I'm like, "Can you speak like a real person?" Yeah. Wow. He took me right out of the movie. I was like, "This is ridiculous."
Yeah, it should be like Marines ain't shit.
Yeah, Marines people suck a big one. I mean, there was none of that. It was all like, "What do you think, dipshit? This is a Marine. We're United States Marines, though." Okay, what else are you? Do you have feelings? You like long walks on the beach?
What's your favorite color?
Can you have some depth?
I can lift 10 times my own weight. I don't know what that is.
Well, I'm sorry to take the conversation down this path.
Let me put it right back on track.
Let's get back to geeky stuff.
Godzilla. Let's get back to Godzilla.
I'm glad I got Bilotti's point of view on that. And
I like hearing Bilotti's like non-Godzilla things.
No, that's me too. Yeah. Because there's more to Bilotti than Godzilla. But what about God King Kong? Right. What about King Kong versus
I'm not
Godzilla?
Crazy.
No. Yeah, what are your thoughts on – so that's for the listener, it's Godzilla 2, King Kong – or Skull Island, right?
Skull Island.
I think – no, Skull Island, then Godzilla 2, and then the crossover in 2020. So what are your thoughts on this, Bilotti?
I'm not crazy about the original King Kong versus Godzilla. It was a goofy movie. The King Kong suit looked like ass. This is the 1962 yes. television.
This is true.
This is all true.
But it was 62.
But you know, the 1954 version blew all those away, and that was made in post-war Japan.
Oh, shit.
But then again, they all were. Anyway, the 62 Godzilla is an iconic suit. I'm not a fan of it. I will probably draw it one day, but it was just a goofy satire of Japan and corporations in Japan at the time. So you got that going for me. Like, I'm not a fan of the original. And it's just weird because the second Godzilla, what I thought they were going to do, the second movie was supposed to be the legendary Godzilla movie, was supposed to be Godzilla, Rodan, and Mothra. And then what I thought they were going to do was have King Ghidorah come in the third movie.
Okay.
But now it's like they're going to make the second movie with three monsters in it, Godzilla, Mothra, Rodan, and King Ghidorah. And then the third movie is going to be King Kong. It seems kind of anticlimactic.
It's just a shared universe trend.
I think it's anticlimactic for Godzilla hardcore fans, but I think the mainstream public, you throw Godzilla and King Kong in a movie together, and that's gangbusters.
It's gonna sell.
All right, I'm going to blow John Bilotti's mind right now.
Uh-oh.
Blow it away. Blow away.
Hold on.
Here's the rundown. I'm basically kicking John in the nuts right now.
Uh-oh.
Bring your worst.
Nobody cares about Mothra. Nobody.
Oh,
shit. Dude, just get it.
Oh, no.
I like when Rugboy gets a little tipsy. He'll just speak his mind even more.
Who cares about Mothra?
I don't care about Mothra. I don't like Mothra. I never did. It's the only one of my prints that doesn't sell. It's the one Mothra. It was the only at G-Fest this past summer. I sold out almost everything. And Mothra was this. The stack of prints was sitting there nice and tall.
All right, so you can back me up when I say this.
I can back up 100%. I don't like Mothra.
Nobody cares about Mothra. Okay, like let's just get into the tactile thing about Godzilla. Okay, Godzilla fighting a thing that's flying around him that he can't actually grab and fucking bite and kick. It's not fun. Sorry. I want to see fucking some fucking – when you go see Rocky, you want to see Rocky punching the guy in the face.
Right.
When you see Godzilla, when you watch Triple H or whatever your fucking WWE, I mean, I've made like kaiju, like they've made this kaiju wrestling team.
Oh, there is?
There's like a kaiju like wrestling that's out there. Someone thought of the great thing of like combining like Godzilla or kaiju wrestling.
Kaiju Big Battelle. Yeah,
there's a Kaiju Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, what? Yeah, look it up.
Big Battelle. What? Big Battelle.
Big Battle. Learn how to fucking read.
It's a bunch of art school.
How do you say Battelle? Why do you give it like the French?
But that's how it's spelled. It's spelled.
Like, what the fuck is that, Memron?
Oh my god! It's guys in suits like fighting each other in a ring. What is this?
I think they went to Pratt too.
What?
Yeah. I think they're all a bunch of art school kids that just made.
Oh, we might have to talk to these people.
Yeah, get them on the show.
This guy's wearing a mushroom head. There's a clown as a referee. What is going on? There's a giant waffle and a giant mushroom fighting each other.
Breathe, Imran.
I don't understand this.
No, that's I would just throw in, though, I know you mentioned that the King Kong versus Godzilla, the original, is very, very campy. And it is. But it is. If you look at the shared universe tone of, well, the tone that the first Godzilla that came out, what, 2 years ago or a year ago, and if they're going off of Peter Jackson's King Kong, which I think Skull Island is a prequel of, those movies are both a little more serious. So I think you're going to get a more serious tone for this eventual crossover.
No, I know that for a fact. It's going to be dark and brooding and all that crap. But to me, King Ghidorah is like the Thanos of the Godzilla universe. I think if you build him up for like two movies, like I'd say have the second movie versus King Kong, and then or even have Mothra and Rodan, and maybe the third movie King Kong. And then the fourth movie, have them all team up against Ghidorah. Like, that would be amazing. Godzilla, King Kong, Rodan and Mothra versus King Ghidorah. That's never been done before.
Ghidorah's really a three-headed dude, right?
I'm also kind of curious about logistics. I know Rugboy had a theory on when this is going to take place, but currently, King Kong is super
small. King Kong's tiny and Godzilla's the size of a building. Like, that's no contest.
Well, if you go through history, the original 1954 Godzilla is like 120 feet.
Well, it's half the size of that last one.
450 feet, if you want to get technical. About 150 feet maximum.
That's still bigger than King Kong, though.
So King Kong, it would be like four times smaller than Godzilla.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So you'd have to like even go before. Like now, 54 Godzilla is irradiated by radiation.
Right.
Right? If you get him before he's irradiated by radiation, he might be smaller.
But the thing is,
Godzilla. It wouldn't be Godzilla.
They're rewriting this new King Kong. They released set photos now of this. They're filming it. I don't know where they're filming it. I think in Hawaii or something. But they showed a set photo of a Kong, King Kong skull, and the thing is ginormous. So they're rewriting the history. So Kong is going to be bigger.
I'm thinking Kong is going to be different and
is going to be affected.
Do you think this is like Kong's relative in some way, and that it's going to be a larger Kong, and Kong was like the runt of the litter?
Yeah, something like that.
It might be. The only thing that's confusing is this Skull Island is supposed to be a prequel. So this is like way earlier than the Peter Jackson King Kong.
It's King Kong's dad.
Yeah, maybe.
I think the King Kong.
The timelines aren't matching
up. But King Kong we're going to see in King Kong vs. Godzilla is going to be a different King Kong.
Oh, it's going to be the same size.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
Yeah. It's
going to
be Donkey Kong.
It's going to be
Donkey Kong.
Be throwing barrels at him and shit. It's me, Mario.
So, Bill, you're not all that excited, or you're just like, you're hesitant?
I'm just like, you know, let's see what you got. Because like I said, the first movie didn't really do it for me. So I'm like, and they're remaking a movie I really didn't want to see.
Do you think this is part of the Hollywood money grab in the sense that they're forcing a shared universe on this now and kind of reacting?
Of course.
But it's like I said last time, Godzilla had the original shared universe. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And the Universal Monsters. They had
the Universal Monsters.
They're starting that up again, too.
My favorite Godzilla story is when the aliens try and take over, and they've done this countless times. This has been like the cliche. Yeah. When aliens try and take over the Earth, and Godzilla is the one thing standing in their way. And that's the quintessential Godzilla story, I think, because you have the one where he is the, you know, the embodiment of, you know, all that's wrong with messing with, you know, the nature and everything. And this is his our comeuppance for that. But then the other strong, just as strong origin is that Godzilla is there to fucking level the playing field when something else from outer space comes and fucks with us.
You know what's funny? Do you know what movie I'd rather see more is Godzilla versus War of the Worlds. Ooh. Those aliens, those tripods, because those things were unstoppable. I'd love to see Godzilla like blow them all away.
There's your ground battle with the aliens.
That's what I want to see.
That'd be awesome.
Like, imagine we had this gigantic fucking being that was just living in the ocean like in like the Mariana Trench, just like miles and miles beneath wherever we can even get to it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly something comes and threatens our planet to the degree where he has to fucking stop what he's doing, stop looking up his YouTube videos, and surface and fucking start fucking some shit up because, like, now, like, they're fucking with his shit.
Yeah.
He comes awake when there's a global threat.
Like, he likes the status quo. That's my Godzilla. And that's
that's the sci-fi Godzilla. Like, that's
the Gamera Godzilla.
Yeah, that's the very sci-fi Godzilla. That's like Gamera 2 Attack of Legion. Like, that's a story that's been retold over and over. And it's always done well.
You know what they did that in Godzilla versus the Smog Monster? That was like that Godzilla.
They did
that's one of my favorite movies, by the way.
Mine too. It's
they did it at when they rebooted the Millennium Godzilla. Godzilla 2000 was the same sort of concept. Yeah. They do that a lot.
The original Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
The King Ghidorah.
Yeah. They're actually all the 70s
Monster Zeros,
movies.
Yeah. They were all, all those. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, all they was the superhero Godzilla, they called it.
Listen, fellas, I think, and listener, I think Rugboy's bottle of bourbon is getting very low, and he's getting a little slurry, so I feel like we should give out final plugs. Yeah, the bottle is almost empty, so let's give out final plugs and wrap this shit up.
Doc and Nerd.
You may have noticed Rugboy's speech has slowed down. I have not pitched
him down. And repeated himself.
There's no editing. This is all going
on. Did I repeat myself?
Did he?
He kept going, if you compare it to American effects, it's not on par. But if you compare it to Japanese, it's okay.
Fantastic. Go stroke a barbell.
He's got one eye open.
He's going to be like fully asleep.
Rugboy looks like Popeye right now.
He looked like Andy Serkis from King Kong.
before the CGI or after the CGI?
Japanese and American. Look,
I don't see any of you drinking. If you were all drinking, I would be normal. Because I'm the only one getting drunk, bloody sober. Imran sober, Anthony sober. I'm the only one that's not.
That's my point. Before Rugboy passes out, John, where can people find you and say hi if they want to geek out or check out your stuff, man?
Well, there's robo7.com, robo7.com for my artwork. you can find me on Facebook. You won't find me in liquor stores with Rugboy.
Who gets your booze for you, Rugboy? You got it. Do you have to pay someone to because they're gonna card you every time you try to buy liquor? How do you get your booze,
dude? People just give me booze.
Oh, he's a Rugboy. That's a good.
Yeah, people just like, look, you need it. Here, you have some booze.
They're like, wow,
you need a drink. Yeah,
it's like Dr. Nick. Wow, you need booze.
Yeah, I have no problem ever getting any kind of illegal.
Guys, if you want to interact with a drunken Rugboy, just follow him on Twitter at @ReallyRugboy.
Yeah, the really Rugboy.
He's really drunk Rugboy. Yeah. Drunk boy. He's drunk boy. Drunk boy. Check out John Bellotti, robo7.com. And of course, what do we want to talk about? Well, speaking of drunk rugs, maybe drunk rugs will show up on a Blab one of these days.
Oh, yeah, that Blab.
Bellotti, you heard about Blab?
No, what's Blab?
Blab is this awesome new live streaming broadcast platform where you can run a show live. There's four panels with cameras. There's a running comment box. People can jump in. We've been doing a weekly show for the past 2 months talking about the week's comic book TV shows live on Blab. Listener, if you go to jockandnerd.com/live, you can see the last one. You can see when the next one's scheduled. You can watch all our replays. It's tons of fun.
And if you can't catch them live, there's also the replays that Imran mentioned, but they're also in podcast format, so you can listen to them as well.
Yeah, and eventually you're going to want to check them out. Now, for everyone, I have a revelation, but for the listener, when it comes out, we'll have already be talking about this, because I don't know, this show is going to post in weeks, but we now have a Jock and Nerd YouTube channel.
Oh, wow.
It's loaded with 12 blabs. Here's the thing with the podcast feed, listener. You're going to hear the show, but there's an awesome post show always. And there's some blabs that we do not put in the podcast feed. So just visit jockandnerd.com/YouTube. It'll take you to our YouTube channel. Subscribe. You can see Rugboy in the felt. We're going to get a lot. Hey, YouTube trolls, fucking bring it.
Oh, shit.
That's all I got to say about that.
Cool.
Do you know that, the people on Elisa's show are flaming me right now.
Really?
I think Rugboy, I think that Kermit and Friends has turned on Rugboy. They used to love him. Are they finding you on Twitter and trolling you? Anything?
No, it's just like, look, let's do the reality of it is, if I sign on to Spreecast when Elisa Giordano is doing her show, Benji and Elisa let me on within like 10 minutes.
Yep.
Like I get right on. But I get cut off because people just start shitting on me immediately as soon as I get on. Like, he's not funny, he's not cool, blah, 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 fuck this puppet.
Dude, don't let those assholes get to you. That's the point of the show.
I have to be drunk in order to be funny, and I can't be drunk every night.
That's you become a rug boyaholic.
He chugs down another glass of
listener,
bourbon.
Ruggs is talking about this show called Kermit and Friends, hosted by Elisa Giordano. It's similar to Blab. It's a 5 days a week on cam Spreecast. Show on Spreecast. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to check out some of that. But I'll tell you what, the last Blab, we had a lot of people in the comment box saying, hey guys, love your show. I've been hearing about you in the web series community, one dude wrote. Oh, I was like, what? And then so this girl with Geeks with Wives or some other tweet, he's like, I heard from this person. So, Ruggs, it's working. We're pulling people.
Yeah, like, I'm planning on hopping on just Blabs. Just you jumping should. From Blab to Blab. Just saying, everybody know, like, hi, I'm Rugboy. I am a Felty, and you should come watch our show. And I just tell them about you and Anthony and how
spread the word. Yeah.
We're awesome together. Yeah. We're like a superpower when we're combined, like Captain Planet.
Wonder Twins activate. I'll be the head. Oh, that's Voltron.
I'm going to be the penis.
Rugboy is the penis in Voltron.
I'm calling that.
Sure, you can be whatever you want, Rugboy.
Listener, you can also send us an audio comment if you have something to say and you want to chime into the conversation. Just pull out your phone, go to speakpipe.com/jockandnerd or hit that link in the show notes. You can send us a 90-second comment and you can be on the show. It's lots of fun.
Sweet. You can also email us, show@jockandnerd.com. Twitter, jockandnerdcast, C-A-S-T. Also on Facebook as well. Just look us up, Jock and Nerd.
Bilotti, this show is also going to be on a bunch of networks that we're on.
Oh, yeah.
So it's more ear holes and exposure for all of us. And so we got a shout out to the Tangent Bound Network, WeBeGeeks.net, A Place to Hang Your Cape, and Podcast.ph. This show not only is at jockandnerd.com, it's at all those websites also. So it's a lot of fun.
So if you want the show, though, in your little podcast app, just subscribe on your favorite podcast app, specifically iTunes, though we would prefer that, and then you could write a nice review as well.
John, this is what I want you to do. Okay. You told me you got an iPhone. You're gonna go to that iPhone. You're gonna open up the podcast app. You're gonna search the Jock and Nerd Podcast. You're gonna hit subscribe. After you do that,
I have it right here.
Okay.
Perfect.
He's doing it live.
Nothing more riveting than doing it live.
Okay, he's doing it live. So subscribe, and then you'll also be able to leave us a rating and a review. And listener, you should do the same because we will read reviews on the show. We love hearing from you, and it helps us get found in iTunes. It helps us in the rankings. It helps us spread the geekery and this empire of stupidity.
Jock and Nerd!
Subscribe in iTunes, please. Thank you. And always, we said Facebook, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. Listener, the links are all in the show notes right there. But the one thing you can do that's easy, free, and fun, tell a friend.
Tell a friend.
Tell a friend about the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Run up to them and give them one of these.
Jock and Nerd.
There you are.
See? Bilotti found us.
It's easy.
And now, Bilotti,
I couldn't find you.
You're going to get Rug Boy in your pocket as soon as it comes out, whether you like it or not.
Really?
Yeah, whether you like it or not. Wowie zowie!
I think one in my pocket.
Everybody wants a little Felty in their pocket.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know about that.
Come on, Anthony.
All right. Look, guys, thanks for hanging out. Listener, thanks for listening. We love every second you spend with us. From a drunk rug boy, my name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's a nerd.
We'll hear you next time.
Are we on the after show part yet?
This is it, you drunk
All right.
fuck.
Dude, I'm fucked up, dude. I'm
really out. Shit.
Dude, I have like a half a bottle, and look at this.
What
was with the eye?
Yeah.
I can't focus. I have one eye open. I'm like Popeye.
It was killing
me. Pink Floyd animation.
I think he was seeing like three different monitors at once.
I'm fucked up right now. I went to go take a piss, and I literally like I had to sit down to take a piss.
Listener, this is a special treat. You are experiencing a drunk rug boy. This is not every day. This is not every show. We should take advantage of this a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. So like I don't want to get too far.
Drunksy?
He looks like Fetty Wap right now.
Who is Fetty Wap?
Look him up.
You don't know who Fetty Wap is?
Fuck your Fetty Wap.
I'm a Fatty Wap.
I keep hearing millennials talk about Fetty Wap.
Without papers.
Oh, he does look like Fetty Wap. This guy looks like a cross between like Chris Hart and fucking Chris Rock.
All right. So like Bilotti.
Yeah.
We have to get into this because we're doing an expose on you.
Oh, Christ.
All right, so we're talking about your – we are recording, but we're going to put this in the post show.
This is in the post show. Hold on. Job, shut the fuck up. Come here.
So I want to get this out there. We can cut this out if you want to.
All right, we'll see you later.
Like, where does Bubbles come from? Where does Bubbles Bilotti come from?
All right.
Bubbles?
That's his nickname.
That was my nickname in college.
That was my nickname in high school. No, it wasn't.
His name is Bubbles Bilotti. That's how I know him.
We were sitting around. We were all trying to come up with nicknames for each other. And apparently I was like happy-go-lucky, and I was like, you know, boop, 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 like bubbling around. So then he just said, oh, we'll call him Bubbles. And I was like, what the fuck? And then it just stuck.
And you were called Bloody Bubbles all the time?
They were calling me Bubbles. I have like friends from college will text me or email me, hey, Bubbles. And I'm like, oh, hey, Bubbles.
And people are like, are you texting Michael Jackson's pet monkey? What is this?
Like, and you look straight man, dude. You have like a manly voice.
You do not look like John Bubbles Bilotti Jr.
You do not look like Bubbles.
I was fatter, though, in college. Okay. I didn't lose weight until like my senior year.
How does being fat make you Bubbles, though?
I have no idea.
You bubbling.
Maybe around like a bubble? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out, but because like I know people that know Bilotti, and they're like, hey, you know Bubbles? And I'm like, Bubbles?
What? Fucking Bubbles?
And fucking fishnet stockings? Like, what did he walk around? Like, why are they calling him Bubbles?
I have no idea. Like I said, because I was bubbly. I'll tell you what it is. Remember we had that conversation earlier in the show about going to art school and meeting like-minded people? I was really fucking happy. So maybe that's what it was. I was just so happy to like be in a school I wanted to be in, and I came across as like this happy-go-lucky like pansy. So that's where Bubbles came
Bubbles,
from,
let me I ask think. You this, Bubbles.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
How much weight did you lose, and how did you lose it?
I was about, at my heaviest, I want to say about 280 pounds.
Holy fuck.
Shit. That's heavier than I was at my heaviest by
But
50
I'm 6'2".
Pounds. You're a tall so guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's a strapping young man. He's like...
Now I am.
So what are you at now, then?
So I can't really...
So in college, there was like, we had 1 month off from between... during like a semester, and I just ate beans and ran. No, I didn't even run. I just did like the treadmill on an incline 5 days a week for like an hour, and I dropped like 80 pounds.
Holy shit.
So my skinniest was like 200 pounds, and then I started working out. So then I got up to like 240, but it was muscle. And then I stopped eating meat and dairy, and now I'm down to like 250. My average is like 215 now, so I sort of like evened out a
what's
little
your
bit.
Diet
are you like a vegan
yeah
now?
What's your diet now?
Yeah, I became a vegan.
Really?
Yeah, I was always a vegetarian, and I decided to become vegan a couple of years ago.
Oh wow.
That's a whole reason? Other podcast. Oh, I could tell you guys even more shit. It'll blow your fucking
listen
mind.
I went through a whole I was a fat guy my whole life, and I went through a whole thing where, so it's always interesting to me what triggers someone and what that it actually takes a change in mindset and not just diets and fads. It's like a paradigm shift.
It's a life change.
But I lost like 50 pounds twice, like up and down. And I'm still like, probably I'd love to lose a 20 pounds, but, and I was doing CrossFit and I stopped, but I got really obsessed with health and nutrition and paleo and everything.
Let me stop this right now. All right. There was two kinds of Imrons.
Yeah.
There was fat Imran and there was druggy Imran that was really skinny.
Wow. Well, and then, junky Imran.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then there was And when then there was like a fit Imran. That was the fucking three, weirdest thing
I've ever experienced. There's three. Yeah. Well, he
CrossFit Imran. I can't even wrap my fucking brains around
CrossFit Imran. So CrossFit Imran would eat the worst smelling fish I've ever smelled in my life. His office would stink every. He had to. You had to close your door.
I eat the same shit every day. Though.
Drink alcohol for sustenance. And then,
that's
like,
funny.
No.
And then all of a sudden he's like, "Oh, I'm like." On a clean diet, and I'm doing CrossFit. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
So but that's how you lose the weight. You got to eat like the same boring shit every day.
Unfortunately, that's true.
That's how it is. Yeah. There's no other way around it.
Now, Junkie Imran, I forgot about that. I was at one point, I just remember I was in Brooklyn. What happened was maybe I didn't have a lot of money, and maybe I was depressed. Like, okay, so my dad had died of cancer in 1996, and I was going through – I was at college, and I went – and I decided I'm going to go back and finish college is the best way I can help and deal with this. And yes, it was kind of avoidance. And when I got back, I just ended up just living really on like Guinness, tequila, and Marlboro Reds was my diet.
Yeah, that was his diet.
Yeah.
That's the Imran that I know.
And then I remember one day looking at my shadow on the ground, and I was like, wow, is that me? I was like, I'm really skinny. And, you know, I would go visit home, and my mom thought I was fucking dying. Because while I was skinny, I was not...
You're not a healthy
skinny. I was not strong at all. I was very... It was really weird.
And there's a difference between being skinny fit and skinny, like, not healthy.
And I look back now, and I think I was really depressed that I didn't know it. Like, I didn't
do it. You probably had a form of depression.
Yeah, for a couple... And I wasn't able... You know, when you're in it, you can't... See?
You know, it takes someone else to point it out to you. And then you have to realize it for yourself, too. Even if someone points it out, you're still like,
nobody pointed it out, and I didn't come to this conclusion until years later. Mm-hmm. When I went back, I was like, oh, fuck, I was really depressed, and I didn't see it, and I used that as an escape. Because, I mean, you're in New York City. You can get whatever the fuck drugs you want at whatever time of day. That's why the city's amazing. Part of the reason.
And bagels. You get bagels. You get
fucking a bagel, a hooker, and a bag of crack rock all in the same corner.
Pizza, all rolled into
and that's the same corner. That's one corner in the village.
That's the Lower East Side.
Yes. So that was the I forgot about skinny fucking crackhead Imran. I did that for a while.
Yeah, but you know what though, Imran? When you were depressed and you were skinny, I was depressed and I was fat. I mean, we all, you know, everybody deals with it differently. Like, my parents were always fighting growing up, and you know, I would just run to my room and watch Godzilla and Kung Fu movies and eat. I mean, that was my solace was that.
Yeah. That's weird. Yeah, some people, when they're depressed, they eat.
Yeah.
Like me, if I get depressed, I don't eat.
Really?
I feel like Anthony's been good-looking his whole life.
you have no idea what it's like to be fucking...
He has no fucking clue.
That's why I have him. He represents the normals out there, because everyone else I know are fucking weirdos, and nobody had a normal life, and...
That is the norm, though. That's the norm now.
That
I don't know anybody has like
that. Yeah, everyone's got skeletons, man.
Dysfunctional things.
What's your skeletons, Anthony? I want to know.
This shirt doesn't fit. That's what it was.
This shirt doesn't fit today.
This small shirt is too large for me.
This small is just too tight.
Do you guys make a men's
don't pubes?
Where are my pubes today?
I'm 15. Where are my pubes?
My balls haven't dropped.
But Rugboy does have an interesting point. So far on the show, we have all, but even tonight, we have all revealed something about ourselves that was perhaps difficult. Rugboy's given his felty story. I've talked about my shit. Anthony, though, I feel like we haven't got much contribution from you on that end of things.
Well, if you want, I had a mild form of depression once I graduated from college, I think, looking back on it, because I had a girlfriend all throughout college. And we broke up literally the last day before I graduated. And it was good. Like, we needed
mutual?
Mutual, yeah. She was going away and we needed to break up. So I never in college was the guy slaying a bunch of pussy.
Yeah.
I left college never being that guy. Yeah. So I would always visit back at U of I. Every weekend I would come back.
Yeah.
I'd always come back and I'd be the guy that was like, he graduated and he's coming back. And I'd be there all the time and I'd be wasted out of my mind and like doing things or whatever. And literally it came to a point where I think in the spring or winter, I like drove home drunk, like wasted.
All the way back.
Not all the way back, but I was like, I clearly like I got back, and then the next day I was like, how did I get home?
Oh,
like,
fuck. You drove. That's never good.
So literally, I was like, all right, man, this is the fork in the road. And I literally went for Lent. I gave up alcohol, and I was like, I'm gonna give up alcohol for Lent. And I was like, I'm just a test. But literally, 40 plus days.
You should have just given up pussy for Lent.
40 plus days, sober as hell.
But what caused that depression? Were you guys, were you in love with
her?
No,
no. I was depressed because I didn't. I was so used to being in college, like that lifestyle of being carefree. And like not having responsibilities.
What the fuck am I doing?
And now I'm like working a 9-to-5, and I'm like, fuck, man. What the
Listen, I miss Imran. I really do.
Aww.
Imran is like one of my best friends of all time.
That's sweet of you, Ruggs. And like, I've
and we, dude, you know this. When we would be together in the same room, we could just entertain the shit out of each other. I have one eye open right now.
the fact
the other eye is barely open.
The fact
way.
That he's
so you know that it's true. I have like about a like
this is
like a
this is drunk Ruggs spilling his guts.
But, in my right now.
But Ruggs, you're right because this is where all this show can be directly related to you and me meeting each other the first day of fucking Pratt Institute back in 1993. Because
absolutely,
because you gave we bounced so well off each other. We would write stupid silly songs.
Yeah,
we wanted
absolutely.
To. I wrote a play and I put him in it, and it was a very like.
I thought you were gonna go with I wrote a song for him.
No, he would write the songs.
I wrote a song for him.
He did. He wrote a song for me, but you know, after meeting you, like I don't think I would have been able to do these things.
I just think that everybody in the world, like everyone, all of us, have some kind of catalyst that's another person. And we have to seek that out. And, like, in a lot of ways, and, like, when we do another – we're going to have another show or two of that. It's going to be related to this.
Yeah.
And I'm drunk, and I'm, like, not even saying things properly.
Sorry.
All right? I'm, like, saying
really?
Things
properly.
I have one eye open, and I can barely make a sentence. But
– terrific.
All right? The thing is that we all have catalysts in our lives that we respond to. So one of those things is Imran. Like Imran is one of those people that always had you could always bounce something off of it. Something would come back. You know when you throw something into the abyss and nothing comes back?
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. You're sitting across from like a hot girl and you say something great and nothing comes back. That's the worst feeling. Like you just slayed like the perfect line.
Yeah.
You just made like the perfect fucking sentence and no one acknowledges it. Imran would always be there to acknowledge that thought. Think
special.
About it.
Yeah,
that's special.
Think about that.
That's true.
Think about that in your life when you throw out this fucking cherry, fucking perfect observation, and no one fucking acknowledges.
I hate when I waste a line and no one and I get nothing. I'm
worst.
Like,
that's the worst. Dude, feeling, dude,
Rug Boy got so into it, his other eye opened. Holy fuck!
Yeah.
He's sober again.
He's sober enough thinking about Imran.
I'm at the other end.
He drank himself sober.
He's caught his second wind.
He got so drunk that he sobered himself
up. Let's do another 3-hour show.